Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、
こん
なとこに。
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint Radio at E3, day one. We made it to E3. We made it after
we did E3.
Days of trying. Well, okay. Well, you know what? I'm gonna be honest. If I went home right now, I'd be happy. We'll get to why.
This is our chance, actually.
We can leave. We can just go to the beach for 2 days. Nobody's going to know.
Oh, shit. We can just go to the beach for 2 days.
Sorry, I have a conflict. I'm at the beach.
Okay. Hey, y'all watching this?
Don't tell anybody.
You didn't hear shit.
Don't narc.
You don't know anything.
We're going to E3 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to go see Resident Evil. So let me know how the beach is.
That's fair. I mean, I think the problem is we all still have good. Like, I want to go see Dying Light 2.
Yeah.
We all have good stuff.
I might be on a beach.
Danielle, you're going to see Tomb Raider, Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about what.
I have an interview.
You have an interview. That part's exciting.
With the co-writer. So
did we start the podcast?
Yeah,
we're in
it. Did you intro it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I said we made it to day one.
Oh.
I'm Austin Walker.
No, we're not.
Danielle Riendo.
Yeah, I sure am.
In front of me is Rob Axelios himself.
Axios?
We learned out that's his middle name.
Alexandrios.
Yo, earlier today, we were like, what's everybody's middle name? And Natalie just stood up and pointed at Rob Zachney and was like, Warren. And it was. And that was wild.
It was a deeply unsettling moment.
It was it's really true. Amazing.
Also joining us, Patrick Klepek. That's
Patrick
everybody.
Benjamin Klepek.
Patrick please. Benjamin Klepek.
Please. Patrick Benjamin Button Klepek. He ages in reverse.
Right.
Wow, it often feels that way.
All right, we're going to go around the table and talk about some of the best games that we saw today. Obviously, we saw a lot of things. We can't be here until midnight probably because we all have to be out the door by 8 a.m. tomorrow. So we should kind of think about the big things. I just want to hear everything you saw, say the words. And maybe we'll revisit it down the line, you know? So let's start with you, Danielle. What did you see today?
I saw some cool stuff from Double Fine.
Awesome.
I will say that the things that I saw were Knights and Bikes, Kids, Ooblets, and a game called, well, also Gang Beasts, like new content for Gang Beasts.
Oh, awesome.
But I'll focus so on... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
These are all the published things, right?
Yes, these are Double Fine Presents games.
No Psychonauts 2.
No Psychonauts 2. I know.
Probably next
that's
year.
My, like, game of...
They delayed it out of E3 in addition to delaying it out of your most anticipated like game of 2018.
2027.
So tell us about these other games. Ooblets, Knights and Bikes, Kids, and...
I'll talk a little bit about Kids, because I don't think people have heard about that at all. It is an iOS game from a studio called Playables, I think is the name. They have an animation background. It's like a tiny two-person studio. All these sort of Double Fine Presents games were all from two-person studios that also have contractors for music or, you know, something else, basically, in the game. But very, very small studios. And this is a sort of interactive art game where you're interacting with these tiny little people. They're almost like stick figure drawings of people, like very sort of monogendered, like little stick figure people. And it's very much about, the pitch was like, it's about life, it's about death, it's about the things in between. It's monochromatic, black and white.
Is it like... So I played another game by that team
at
an event at Judges Week. The Kids was also there.
The one just, that was about sex.
The one was about sex and plugs and plugging in.
Plugging things.
Plugging things in. It was like...
What?
It's about sex and it's like... It almost looked
baby.
Like...
Baby.
It almost looked... Yeah. It's about you and me. But all the good things.
Like
all
Cyberpunk. Things.
Like Cyberpunk, which we'll get to. Which also had sex in it. It... was like an animation project that was turned into a game where like people had like plug heads and they were plugging into each other and they were finding plug outlets where you didn't expect them to be.
Oh,
it was like almost like a early 90s MTV, like Liquid Television animation.
Yes, sure. Is it that does. Still a, it's very, very it's like much in that vein.
Is Flux kids like that too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. And it's much more about like crowds and sort of follow the leader kind of stuff. And it's also, it's a little dark. Okay. There's definitely a lot of like jumping into holes. And not in the fun way, like in the plug game.
In the less fun way.
But like, it was really cool. I love stuff. Exactly.
Follow the leader, like the corn song.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. You know, everybody's a freak
it's
on a leash.
Second, I just made a freak on the leash joke yesterday.
Oh, good. See, so, this is why we work together.
There all day that, I dream about sex and plugs.
And plugs. So, you right. Know, exactly.
My favorite Limp Bizkit song.
It's exactly. Like you know, thank you.
So what else was there? So that's, yeah. That's kids. That's cool. Out now or that's out soon? That's out.
They were all... 2018, hopefully.
Okay.
That was pretty much the whole thing. And we did talk a little bit about like work practices and labor practices there. That was good and
awesome.
Like,
oh. We're I think we're working on a bigger piece about that here.
Right. I'm not going to go into that at all. Yeah. It was just sort of like.
No one's going to.
I can't run the piece now because Danielle right. Said she's going to. She talked to them about labor. So now it's dead. We're going to kill
okay,
the piece.
Okay. Well.
Kill it now.
It
was cool. Yeah. It was cool. You know. Double Fine Presents, they're very much about, I asked them about, you know, like their values and about the sorts of things that they want to instill in the studios they work with. And you know, they said things like interesting aesthetics and unique things that we haven't necessarily seen before.
Right.
And also instilling somewhat of a sense of quality of life
right.
issues.
We've had a lot of conversations lately about Steam as a curator, right?
Yes.
And it's obvious for, I mean, in some ways it's more obvious, I think, about publishers as curators. It's like, hey, what is your vision? What is your voice? What are the types of games you would like to publish? Did you find a through line with the Double Fine Presents
Absolutely.
Games?
Yeah, and Greg Rice, who is instrumental in that sort of effort, was talking specifically about, like, we're always looking for unique aesthetics. We're always looking for things that speak to us as people. You know, he says, like, as human beings, like, things that actually speak to us on a human level. Like, things that, right. that work for us, basically. And things we haven't seen a million times before. So kids really stood out, apparently, to a lot of the teams. Another thing that stood out was Knights and Bikes, which is a really, really adorable, almost... it would fall within the sort of Zelda 2D-ish Zelda isometric world. Generally, it's a you know an action adventure right. game starring two girls. They have really cute names. It's like Nessa and Esmelda. Or something
yeah, I played
like
a
that.
Version of this last year at like the. There's an indie night at Judges Week. So Judges Week is always yeah. like here's like big games from big publishers, and then there's one night a week that is like a bunch of rad indie devs get together and host a bunch of other indie devs. So it's like very established people like Nathan Vella and like Greg yeah. who are like, oh hey, we have capital, like let's have a night where really cool up and coming
Nathan Vella of
be.
Capybara Games
yeah
is
right sorry
one
yeah.
of the
yeah,
studio
yeah.
heads there yeah
right
for sure.
And so Knights and Bikes was there
yeah
and it seems so cute, but that was a year ago, so I'm curious like what your impressions are, like explain what that game is.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, again, like a sort of isometric 3D, I guess it's 3D, but you know, basically from a very far point of view, looks a little bit like a Zelda like but it's about two girls who are friends who live on this little island that is going bankrupt, and they're
it's like a
of,
modern setting.
Yeah, it's
God,
a modern
it's
setting.
Too real.
Or it actually might be 80s, because they
right,
definitely
but,
had like a game console that was like
sure
looked like an SNES maybe, but yeah, and they sort of run around this island having adventures and exploring, and it looked very exploration heavy, which made me very happy.
Mm-hmm.
They were like two kids who much of the pitch was about. Hey, they're kids, so they're young, and they want to have adventures and be
right.
cool, but they also want to be too old for the things that they are doing.
Like, too cool for school.
Exactly,
that's
which
good.
Was very, very cute. It had a lot of style.
I know that exact moment in
yes.
childhood.
They're
yeah.
like 12, 13.
Yeah.
Like, you still
you
like
still
those
actually
kid things.
You still actually want to be a kid, and you're getting anxious that it's ending, but
yeah.
at the same time, you want it to end.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yep, and which was really, really cool.
Like it, E3.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just
every
like
year,
that.
E3 is being 13. Yeah.
Awesome.
Looks so cute. I'm really excited for it. Again, all these games are 2018, hopefully.
Right.
So,
oh,
yeah.
And then Ooblets is
Ooblets.
One of the cutest games in development right now.
Yes.
You said there was a dance battle?
Yes. So the main thing they were showing, so
can
I
set
saw...
up what Ooblets is?
It's cute.
Sure.
It's cute.
Austin, you're cute
Farming.
Too, but sometimes we got to explain you.
Yeah, sometimes we got to explain. Sometimes you go on a podcast, you got to explain Austin.
Right.
You know,
that's
right.
True.
It's basically a town simulator with a lot of Pokemon elements, and it's very, very cute. So you go in, you have your little person, and you can customize your person and their clothes and their, you know, sort of their presentation and everything. And you meet the mayor, and the mayor's like, here's a seed. You can farm this. There's farming elements, too. That's the other part. Okay,
right.
So
sounds
it's a
like
town simulator, farm simulator,
and Pokemon,
and all the battles.
It's like Animal Crossing, Pokemon.
Yes.
Dance battle.
Like Harvest Moon,
Harvest
maybe?
Moon, Harvest
a little
Moon,
bit,
Stardew.
Yeah.
I think we're in Stardew Valley.
Stardew Valley.
Harvest
days.
Moon.
Gone.
See ya.
See ya. See ya.
Yeah.
That's how the guy from Comic Zone said see ya.
It is.
See ya.
It is.
Good at the end of every level. Anyway, Ooblets.
Yeah. The main thing that they were showing today, so it was mostly, that's the only one I don't think I really got hands-on time with, but they were showing a lot of, like, actual meaty B-roll of gameplay, and the whole combat system is dance battles. So instead of sort of selecting, you know, the way in Pokemon you sort of select your abilities, you sort of select your fighting moves, instead you select dance moves, and they actually were sort of showing this, they were showing, like, super in-depth, like, the, you know, necessarily, but it's a turn-based system where it basically works like combat, only it's extremely cute. And
so
instead
actually,
of, like,
are you
hitting
actually
things,
hurting them through dance?
No, they're getting discouraged and annoyed.
Good.
by your, like, amazing moves. And these are little Ooblets doing things, which, think Pokemon, but they're all plants. I mean,
right.
Some Pokemon are plants, obviously, but, like, they're little mushroom
true.
People or little flower people.
Wow, I never thought about Pokemon that way.
Makes you think.
Some of them are keys.
Shit.
Some of them are keys.
Some of them are lanterns.
Some of them are garbage.
Some of them are garbage. Some of them are farts. Isn't there, like, a gas cloud that's basically a fart?
Oh, okay. I mean, yeah, there's,
yeah.
Like, coughing is...
Coughing!
That one farts.
Sorry.
Coughing!
Right, farts.
Coughing farts.
Gotta make sure I say it right.
Yeah. If you're coughing farts, let me tell you, you gotta go see a doctor.
Means your mouth is an asshole.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I get you.
All right. But it looked really cute. I'm very excited for it. I think this is going to be, if they sort of make good on the promise of all these different systems.
Yeah.
And they were also saying that everything kind of feeds into everything else. So you can win a dance battle, you get a new seed to make a
right.
little plant, and that could be a new Ooblet, or it could be a new,
right.
you know, dance
right.
move
sure.
or something like that. So I am very, very interested in this. And it's adorable. Of course
right.
it's adorable.
Also targeted.
Very colorful.
2018?
Yes.
Okay.
I think all of these were 2018, hopefully.
Cool. I just briefly want to point people to a thread. So there was no Animal Crossing today. It was one of the things that the Nintendo Direct people were hoping there'd be a full Animal Crossing. There was not. Janine Hawkins, occasional Waypoint freelancer, did a really great thread of games like Animal Crossing in that, or Stardew, that sort of like soft but like work focused or
like growing things and
growing
and,
things
yeah.
objective based sort of like
right.
task management.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Janine has a fucking incredible name for this, and I always forget what her genre name is, but she should, if she's in the chat, she should
it's
say
something like knitting games. It's not knitting
yeah,
games,
but
it has
that
idea
it's like,
of
like
patchwork
making
or something.
Games or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah, you remember from, she's written about this.
Yeah, yeah.
In any case, that's Ooblets for me is on one of the high, it's high on my list of an upcoming one of those
yeah.
because the aesthetic is so, it feels so fresh. It feels so like tied to the aesthetics I already see on places like Twitter and Tumblr. And its vibe just is like really comfortable and welcoming.
Yes, very much so. Very
Super
much
excited
so.
About that.
Very excited about all those games, actually.
Cool.
So.
Yeah.
You see anything else today?
Yeah, I sure did. I played Ori.
Oh, awesome.
I played Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Yes. Yesterday a little bit.
Yeah.
What was your experience with it?
Yeah, mostly, you know, they showed me the gameplay that I'm pretty sure you guys had the same thing, the sand level. That is apparently a few hours into the game, so you have a couple of your abilities at that point.
Right.
But not, you know, not everything yet. And then they kind of let me play it and, you know, tear around
it's
in the world.
It's pretty as fuck.
Oh my God. It's
so pretty.
Gorgeous. They were talking a lot about sort of the lighting model, and they were sort of showing examples of how all the lighting is dynamic. So if they had did you have the sword, basically?
Yeah.
It's like a spirit arc or something,
yeah,
I think
yeah,
they
yeah.
call it, and how it sort of, they were just sort of showing how it shines through each little part of the environment,
oh, sure.
which was really cool.
Yeah.
I know it's a small thing, but
those
I had a tech
things,
director,
they
actually.
They all add up.
They all
right?
add up.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You often don't even notice them. Like,
so that's
how games work.
So it's
yes.
funny. So you had a demo where someone explained to you
yeah.
why, like, the improvements they made. Yesterday when I was explaining why I liked the game and why I thought it was prettier, I specifically said, I can't actually articulate to you
sure.
why I think this game is more beautiful than the original, but I know that it is.
Yeah.
I just can't tell you. And so that's how that stuff works, is like,
yeah.
you don't notice how the lighting bounces off, you know, things dynamically,
right.
unless someone sits there and points out, like, hey, watch the way the arrow, like, goes against the grass.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah,
to see
did you
that.
Use the hammer at all? I fucked around with a lot of the abilities.
A little bit.
I forgot
bit.
That you could switch abilities until, like, halfway
me
through,
too.
And I was like, I hit a button, it was like, oh, right.
Wow. You have this whole wheel
and
of
I
powers.
I burned through all my mana or whatever, and then all I had left was the sword and the hammer, and I was like, I'm just gonna fucking hammer some fools, so it was fun.
There you go,
that
yeah.
fucking underground... like monster that goes through the sand,
mm-hmm.
hit that thing with the energy hammer, spirit hammer, whatever.
Oh,
it was.
He was in the sand. Like, it's not even out there fighting.
It was
you.
Trying to fight me.
Wow.
When
was
he
it
went
though?
Into his territory.
I guess that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah,
I guess I should have just stayed by myself.
Well, Ori, you know, Ori's a friendly guy.
It's me, Ori.
Oh, Ori.
I just want to make friends and go digging in the sand.
I think that's what Ori sounds like.
Whack. I wanted to kill things in the sand.
I just wanted to kill all the
I'm
sand.
Just a humble... That's
the thing. I asked what kind of animal little... he is.
And? I'm just a humble cat monkey.
Good.
Swing down in the sand now.
I don't know nothing about this multiple serpent homicide that y'all are asking about.
This country lawyer over
this,
here.
This energy sword? Oh, this is my grandfather's. Hasn't seen service in... Not since the war.
Blood drips off.
So.
The war of 5 minutes ago. When I killed your brother.
Oh, God.
I mean.
Ori is a friendly, happy game.
I'm a happy Ori.
Would you like some tea?
Come on in. Closes the door.
Whack.
Whack. Hammers.
No one ever gets out of that fucking forest.
No, that's it. You're in that forest forever. You know what the will of the wisps is?
Ori in the blind forest is blind because you're dead.
Because you're dead.
Ori, you know, Ori has a dark backstory.
Apparently. I mean, I watched the beginning of that first game and I was like, I can't do more. This is too sad. So
I almost cried, actually, today. Not in the first game, but like just today sitting there. You know, E3 gets to us. E3 gets to us all. And so I was like, you know, there's crowded, it's hot. I was just sitting down and just watching the trailer again. They were like, I promise, we're going to do gameplay, but like, we're just going to show you the trailer real quick just to get the tone right. And I was like, there's a little thing with the baby owl. And I was like, ready to start bawling my eyes out.
I'm with you. I get it. I told you, like, we saw the Smash Brothers stuff and the Breath of the Wild song in a Smash Brothers trailer got me like... Okay, it's gonna be okay. Gonna go see some games with robots in it.
Put on that Kingdom Hearts trailer again. Roll
that shit again. Give me that anime shit straight in my veins.
True. So, you get excited. You get pumped. You know, a little bit.
I can't believe they norted Elsa.
You're someone too late, Mickey.
Someone on Twitter, I got, you know, some Kingdom Hearts fans coming at me. I played those two games, all right?
The two? Excuse me?
The two that matter.
That's not what I hear. I hear there's one that matters.
That's what I
hear. It's on PSP.
True Kingdom Hearts fans know you only have to play one and two,
and that's it. There's a really good tweet going around by a friend of mine named Paris, who was like, man, I hope that they just straight up ignore all the shit in the side games, and they just bring that in, and they don't even mention it. They don't even try to explain it to people who didn't play the side games. Fuck it. That's what these games are about. Bring in all the side shit without any explanation. Just pretend that you knew
that
what it was.
That sounds right. Like,
sounds right to me.
Sounds
anyway,
like
there was
do.
someone who was upset saying that the stories are actually really straightforward. And like,
I've heard that.
They had a lot of all caps in the response to me, and there was a lot of exclamation marks. And I responded with just norted. And then I got blocked.
You've been norted.
Wow, you got blocked.
Yeah, I got blocked.
Wow. Maybe you should have played more. Maybe you should play them again.
I mean, maybe it would have been if I was writing norted the way you were supposed to. Maybe if I was canon accurate.
You're such a troll.
Aqua.
You're such a troll.
Can't believe it. Well, Ori is a forest spirit.
Aqualung.
Did Ori get norted?
Oh, I hope not.
Does Ori have silver hair? Is Ori evil?
That's what happens when he kills the snake thing.
Oh,
becomes norted.
When you murdered him, they were emphasizing, like, oh, play it your way very much more than the previous game. Like, all these different powers and, like, all these different paths. So, like, for you, you norted Ori. And when you committed horrible, horrible homicide.
Snake murder, yeah.
Nordicide.
Nordicide.
That's what happens when Aqua gets norted. It's a Nordicide.
I hate this. Wouldn't that be when you... Did you see anything else today?
Yeah, I saw Super Meat Boy Forever.
Right.
Which I loved, actually. I already mentioned it on the Periscope, but very, very briefly.
Right,
people
who don't know, there was a Periscope we did earlier today that you can dig through if you want to see, like, immediate impressions.
Like 10 minutes
long, it was a short little check-in, but...
Little bud. It's an endless runner, but please don't, like, turn away just because of that. I thought it was actually, like, really rich. The movement felt really good. I was having a really good time with it, and he was showing off a sort of, like,
it has handcrafted levels.
Yes, exactly.
So, so when you say endless runner, what you mean is that you don't directly control left to right the character. It's always running.
You're always
running. But the levels themselves have beginning and end.
It's like runner.
And they are,
like Bit Trip Runner.
Yeah, it's just a
runner.
It's a runner.
Right.
It's a runner.
Yeah. It has an end.
You know.
There are ends
of
those
levels. Like you and me. It's a runner.
It's a runner.
Y'all are runners. They get up so early to go running.
Sometimes.
Gotta go out there run.
Just do what I do. Just don't sleep and then don't worry about it.
And then you're fine.
Yeah, I wandered out here at 8 a.m. and everyone's like, why do you look so bad? And I'm like, why were you running?
Wait, didn't you like drink conditioner or something today?
No, I didn't drink conditioner. That was my thing. I forgot to wash the conditioner out of my hair, got out the shower, and then was like, oh,
not
shit.
How I heard it.
Didn't you drink conditioner? I like that. Also, to get to Danielle's asking of that means there's a view of you that
which
it's
I've
possible
heard.
That
Yo, fuck you, man. Go, go, go.
You couldn't sleep.
I love cyberpunk.
Yeah. Fructis sounds delicious.
All you need. So, that was good. I really liked it. That was my day one. Awesome. I played a lot of really good platformers.
Basically. Awesome. All right.
Yeah.
I started off the day with some smaller things. I had some other stuff. There's one game I really want to talk about. I mean, there's a couple games I really want to talk about. But let me do some small things first. So, mentioned this in the Periscope earlier, but I played Tunic, the game with the fox.
Cute fox.
Cute fox thing. Super. I'll talk about this more, I think, in a week or something. Not for embargo reasons, just because I don't want to hang here.
There's a bunch of smaller games that we played.
We'll jump ahead of them.
Killer Queen Black I played, but like we're going to talk about that on Monday after E3.
Tunic is one of those. Fox of the Sword, Zelda meets Dark Souls-y combat in some ways. With a little bit of Fez. A little bit of like, hey, what's that weird rune glyph over there? Mm. Huh? Okay, so we'll talk about that on Monday. I also played, and this one's maybe a little more interesting, Generation Zero. Or I didn't play it. I saw a demo. I did not play it. Generation Zero.
Avalanche.
The new Avalanche game.
One of several new Avalanche
games. So, they're doing Rage 2, Just Cause 4, and this. This seems to be coming from a small team at Avalanche. It seems experimental for them in a couple of ways. One is it's a co-op first-person shooter. Hmm. I thought it was a co-op, like, Left 4 Dead first-person shooter, where there's robots. I don't know if any of you saw this. 1980s Sweden, you're playing young adults. Yeah. Very Simon Stålenhag inspired, but like a little. I did that thread last week. But it's actually an open world first person shooter co-op that you can play with a friend. I don't know how many friends there are questions you don't want to ask. You don't even like, how many people is this? How many guns? You don't want to be that person. And also, sometimes there are those questions that are on the line where it would be useful to know. And you're like, all right, someone else asked that one. So I can ask the thing about youth. Or whatever bullshit I give a fuck about. But no one asked how many players it was. So I don't know off the top of my head. Good. I could look it up.
You refused to compromise your mistake?
No, it was just like then time was up. You know, I asked the question I wanted to ask, you know, in the group round thing. Anyway, so that game has such a cool setting. It's 1980s in Sweden. The way they talk about it is like there is this sort of end of the Cold War moment in Sweden. That's really fascinating. They grew up with, you know, boomboxes and American jeans and a vision for the future and science fiction and this feeling of possibility and stuff. And so that's why you play as young adults. You play as people who are like 20, 21. You come back from a boat trip and a robot attacks your boat and you wind up on the beach and then all the people are gone. And you're like, where the fuck did the people go? And instead of there being people, there's robots. And, you know, you're kind of scavenging for weapons and supplies and gear, and the robots have a sort of Horizon Zero Dawn thing.
Very Boston Dynamics-y,
very industrial-looking robots, where you can kind of see, once you get an upgrade, you can kind of see where their parts, where their components are, and they're all made of components. Again, very much like Horizon, where if you shoot their lens out, they can't see you. If you shoot their, you know, the hydraulics on their legs, they move more slowly. I think that there's something there. It reminded me that Avalanche also makes those hunting games because we talked about this. I was like, oh, you already have this engine. They're using the engine that they had that trailer for at the PC gaming show. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful
world. It's got some draw distance.
It has some great draw distance.
To that trailer.
That trailer said draw distance. There was some draw distance. There's like little Swedish hamlet on the bay, you know, really beautiful. I really don't like the enemy design in that game. I think those robots are really boring looking, unlike the Boston Dynamic ones, which kind of capture this really foreboding sense of like, oh, that thing's going to fuck me up.
Is that part of that animation?
Part of its animation. Design? Part of its animation. But I don't think the robot dogs look that good. And I also think that the robot dogs, I know that the robot dogs attack you by like shooting you with a gun. And it's like, don't build a robot dog.
Bite me, dog.
Fight me, dog. Fight me, bite me. And like, it's just
Drill
like,
me,
it's,
kiss me, kill me.
Right. My favorite Batman song.
It's good.
There is something cool about like, oh, a robot dog just unfolds a Gatling gun off the side of its back.
Sure.
But then when she's like stands in the road and shoots at you, it's like, fuck, like I want this to be something else. And you know, there's some stuff there that feels systemic of like throw a boom box, draw attention to near where the electrical box is, and then shoot the box and then the electricity.
That's pretty all right.
It's neat. But
does
like,
it feel like there would be a lot of like rich systemic interactions in these encounters, or is it
it's
also
a systems
like,
driven game?
Yeah.
Like think about the way the enemy's design works, think about the way their enemies patrol and stuff like that.
But you're just not gonna stand there in the road and draw down on that robot dog with the Gatling gun and shoot it.
Yeah, like, that's what you do. You got like they get like a rifle and then you shoot it in the head and it dies. Okay. And it's like one of those things where it felt like, you know, I think a lot of people, there's lots to like in Horizon Zero Dawn, but almost like Red Faction Guerrilla, with my experience with Horizon, I ended up having like a set, like exact way I dealt with basically every enemy in that game that had to do with a certain arrow type and then a follow-up. This feels like it's poised to feel the same way, where it's like, oh yeah, this is my universal solution to these fights. I just wish the designs looked a little better too. It's people make games. I hope they have time. I don't know when that game comes out. I think next year, I believe, early next year. But I think there really needs to be some work on like making those creatures, those monsters, those robots feel either more familiar and therefore like it's weird that they're dangerous, or making them just look fucking dangerous and move in ways that are dangerous and surprising. So
what's the name of that again?
That is called Generation Zero.
What kind of music's playing on that boot box?
It's like the
can you
music.
Pick the music?
No,
they should let you pick the music.
I only saw them throw it once, so maybe it was just random. The first time it was like this bubbly like 80s pop. But there is a really good like synth, dark synth soundtrack in the background that's just like in the back, and it's subtle enough for me to like it. Where it's like it's not just like the Drive soundtrack, which is a good soundtrack.
Sure,
I've heard it for years now. It's like a variation on that where it's like a little more subtle, a little more low key, and that it worked.
Can't wait until Generation Zero soundtrack beats out Ori and the Blind Forest 2s.
Why are you going to fucking do this to me? This is a fucking old Brad Shoemaker beef with
me. My favorite beef, though.
It's a good beef.
It's just so gloriously petty, and it comes up every 6 months of that fucking show.
What was the game that beat it, though? Was it Splatoon? Or was that the next year?
Oh, who knows?
It was Splatoon. Splatoon
probably
beat
something
it. No, it was Splatoon. Splatoon has a dope soundtrack.
It really
it's good.
Does.
It's good.
It's really good.
It's really good.
Fight me, Brad. I saw Brad today. He's good. What else did I see today? I saw Ghost of Tsushima, which...
We'll get there.
Well, no, I'm just going to... I don't have
What's
to say
the name
much.
Of Shadows Die Twice?
Sekiro. Okay. Sekiro. Sekiro. Okay.
Shadows Somebody Die Twice. Somebody sample that, please?
There's Sekiro. A reason I always call it
I'm bad at the
Shadows
Japanese
Die
R.
Twice.
I'm so bad at the
I
Japanese
can't
R.
do it. Because every time I think about it, then I...
You can just say Sekiro.
Overthink.
I hear... Miss Fujimoto being mad at me for not being able to pronounce the fucking R again, just like in freshman year. So I try to do it.
You took okay? Japanese?
No, it's fine. Yeah, I took Japanese for a year. It's fine.
Of course.
Okay. But Japanese.
Yeah, I did. That was exactly. Of course I did.
Of course
I was
like, you did.
I know wall scrolls, but I took Japanese for a year. Ghost of Tsushima demo. The Sony, like behind closed doors demos, are just the videos from the event last night.
With some Q&A.
With some Q&A.
No playable?
No playable.
In which they will not answer.
Or, you know what, I did not insist. I did not say, hey, can I touch this for judges? But no play. I couldn't play it and then talk about playing it, certainly.
Right.
The more frustrating, the kind of like, they talked about the game in that meeting and like walked through some of their goals around the beauty of nature, the sublime beauty of nature. And, like, the historical moment, and, you know, they didn't want to use a real person because that would feel insensitive to the real... Because it's a real
no
battle.
Supernatural.
No
which
supernatural
was a question
stuff.
That we got to the end of the trailer, not
single
knowing
player,
if that would be a surprise.
Totally.
I'm happy that there's no...
And this is what they say. I don't know if I believe
it. Well, I guess who knows. But as specific as a contrast to Shadows Die Twice, I'm glad
yes.
that there's two slightly different approaches
to samurai
that kind of game,
and that
right?
and yeah exactly so
Neo 2 also coming
yes,
next
yes.
year.
And then you know single player, no branching narratives, no choices, no like I'm going to do this or this at the end of a quest. Single player, I mentioned they kept describing it as being like anthology based, which is an interesting way to the dev who was there, whose name I forget.
I just said ooh.
Oh,
like because that's a that's
what
a
I think
cool
they
idea.
Meant was there were side quests.
That's what I'm listening to.
Yeah, that's what they meant. They
that's
didn't,
not really what anthology means.
No, agreed. I don't know. It was a weird vibe in the room that wasn't combative, but like they didn't tell us anything. We were like, can you talk to us about the combat? It's like, well, we're really happy the same system works for multiple fights and duels. Okay, well, like, what do you do? What button are you hitting?
Why
well, we're not
you,
talking
why,
about
why is
that
it
right
slow?
Now. Why did it slow down and use your special ability? Like, tell me about that ability where you slow down and like slash three dudes. It looks cool. What is it? We're not talking about combat right now. Okay. Well, are
what
my
here
leveling
to do?
Up? What are
about?
We doing? And like, it's just tell me that ahead of time. We all have lots of appointments. Just be like, yo, don't even you know it. If you watched it, unless you're really into it and want to ask some questions about the big picture, the sublime beauty of nature stuff, like which you know maybe
sure.
I would have, and maybe but then I would go in knowing that was the expectation.
Right.
And
I heard the same thing was the, you know, truth is Last of Us demo. There was a reporter in front
right.
of us who I saw later.
Right.
He was rolling his eyes because he was like, It's just the trailer.
Right. Oh, I did forget one thing that was different. It was in localized Japanese, which was cool to see that they had that. Also, the person giving the demo was like, does anyone here speak Japanese?
Oh, no. You told me about this.
And I was, and no one said yes. Or one guy was like, huh? And it was like, no. And he was like, all right, cool. You're going to say what they all say. You're going to translate as it happens then. And the guy was like,
what?
And so then they got to the part of that demo where, like, the two characters are heading towards the monastery and they speak to each other in Japanese. He went to the woman. Yeah, he went to the woman who's the archer at that point. And they say something about going to the monastery in Japanese. And the guy's like, all right, so translate. And he's like, they're going to the monastery. And he did not want to play along. And I was very happy he did not want to play along because there's a version of that story that is way more uncomfortable. Yeah. And they just dropped it at that point.
Already uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's a bad bit.
It's a bad bit. It's like, I get it. You're like, we got to do bits. We got to keep people happy.
Well, the way to do the bit is to make that guy feel uncomfortable in the demo and go, I'm just fucking with you. Like, we're not going to make you do that. That would be ridiculous.
That'd be ridiculous.
Right. Right. That's you funny. On your toes.
That's funny.
Without being weird.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. This reminds me, just random aside. Please. But years ago, there was a StarCraft tournament. I think it might have been the last StarCraft tournament that North American Star League ever ran. So NASL, they're based out of Toronto. But their regular translator didn't show up. And so they have all these Korean players and they don't have any translators. So they just basically poll the audience. It's like, yo, does anybody here speak Korean? And this one poor bastard, Korean Canadian, is like, well, I mean, yeah, I guess. Or somebody dimed him out and was like, yo, Scott here.
Yeah.
And I met this guy.
His parents speak it.
God, I met this guy years later I wish I remembered his name. But so they just
threw him up there?
Yeah, they basically bum rush him and just push him onto the stage. And this is a live stream. And NASL's going out of business. So it's a packed house. Uh-huh. Everyone's seeing off Canadian StarCraft in style. And the guy admitted later to me, he's like, yeah, I speak a little, enough to, converse with some relatives and shit, but
Or if someone said something, I could kind of give you the gist of what they said.
He goes up on the stage, the lights come up, the interview starts, and he does not, the words that are speaking no longer even sound like a language to him. Like, it completely, complete brain wipe. Like, it is just, noises. Like, he loses whatever Korean, he had. And so he just, but then he he's up there and they're waiting. So he starts he tries to fake it.
And he starts
he just starts trying to if I were in this position, what would I say?
Yeah. It seems like a thing you can bullshit. It's a, it's a Q&A.
But the problem is there's so many people who, because it's StarCraft, this is a fan community.
Right.
That handle translation issues for years and years.
Oh, right. So they see right through it.
Shit ton of people are immediately what the fuck is this?
This guy hurts.
The guy's not translating the questions. He is not translating the answers. And the guy just got fucking dragged. It was amazing.
Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, Scott.
God. So there is the bad version of that story where the bit is not allowed to die, and somebody's just I better somehow use context clues to try to fill in this entire narration.
Did you hear it?
It's a small world.
It's coming.
It's
coming for us.
Speaking of music, Banksy is in the chat. And Banksy says the other games that beat out Ori for that year for best soundtrack were Metal Gear Solid 5 because of all the licensed music.
That's
robbery. I think that's in retrospect. Listen, don't blame it on me. I didn't fucking vote for it.
Who voted for that?
It may have been me. And Crypt of the NecroDancer.
Eh.
Yeah. Brad had a great argument, which
I like the music. I like Danny Baranowski's music is terrific, but. Ori, come on.
Ori's great.
Splatoon.
I would have voted Splatoon, to be clear.
So was the weird vibe at Sony a bit did you get the vibe that perhaps it was the next day after a night where everyone realized they'd made a terrible mistake?
Oh, yeah.
And it was a night of fighting and recrimination.
Well, no, because this was not from the... No, no, no. When I say it was a weird vibe, I don't mean among Sony people. Sony people were kind and nice and good. And we had a great... it was a perfectly fine visit. I like seeing the folks there.
Yeah.
It was just... the room expected something.
Like, the restrictions that were put on the presentations.
I should be clear, it was also a room of senior, games reporters. I don't have to name names, right? But it's, people across the field who I know have been in this for combined years of 30 or 40 or 50 years just the people I knew in that
right.
room. Do you know what I mean? It was Totillo. It was Andy McNamara. It was Jess Joho. It's like, and me. And like, we've all been
people
here.
People were like, all right, we saw that demo.
Yeah. Let's talk about the game.
Yeah.
And like, and I can't, I'm not speaking for their, I don't want to say that like just because I know these people, I can read them super well or something. But that was the feeling in the room. It was just like
But to you, it felt like they weren't even willing to talk about the shit they were showing. They weren't even willing to engage with like unpacking.
I think they said that there was lock-on combat. I think that you could lock on. I think that was one thing that they told us.
Okay.
And it's just like, I want more, which is a good thing. That means I want to see more of this game. That means I think that game has potential.
But like relative to...
They worked with historians. That was a cool thing. They've worked with historians and academics about that period of time. Like, there was stuff about the broad picture.
I'm just saying, like, relative to, like, a game like Cyberpunk, and we'll get to that demo later, where it's like, wow, that's how you do a demo.
Or we can talk now about the other one, which is Anthem. So we're going to talk about Anthem. Danica, can you let people know we're about to talk about
Anthem? It's Anthem time.
It's Anthem time. It's Anthem time.
Is there, like, an Anthem, like, we can do, like, a little tiny musical interlude of... Anthem time.
That's it. You got it.
You know it's an anthem. Take me home. No, sorry.
Wow. Everyone had just like sort of forgotten that song.
It's in my brain now.
Actually, take me home to Anthem. Take me home to Anthem.
Yo, so that was okay. So there's a lot of ways to do a PR, to do a meeting at E3 where you finish it and... But no matter what, if you liked it, if you didn't like it, you're polite, you're professional, and
shake
you go,
hands. Shake hands. Good luck with the rest of your everything.
Great work. Yeah,
crack you a know. Joke. Ah, have fun doing this demo 900 more times.
Yeah, exactly. Ha ha ha. Cool missiles. Yeah. Like, nice. And then you walk out the room. And I was grateful to have Patrick there today. First of all, I didn't know we were both going to get to play. I 100% thought it was going to be a handoff controller type thing, or that they were going to guide it. And they're like, oh, yeah, you could shoot the missiles this one time.
Right. Instead, it was like, it took a long time for, like, we showed up to our appointment.
Right.
It was like, we waited around for, like, 10 minutes. And yeah. It was like, oh, I hope that thing's okay. And then we walk in, and it's just two computers.
Right.
Two
and Discord.
Oh,
and
shit.
And Discord.
And they're like, yeah, you're just going to talk together on Discord with us. I was like, oh, we're
and we'll guide you with in your crew. And we're just like, oh, this isn't, like, 10 other people. Like, fuck.
On, like,
all right.
Nice new computers. And so it was like, all right, cool. We'll check it out. When we ended up leaving that room, like, walking out the room and walking out the room next to the room. And then turning to each other like, yo,
did you
fucking play that?
Yeah.
It was like a fucking Key and Peele sketch. It was like a the Liam Neeson.
Out in front of the hotel. Oh, yeah. Did you play Anthems?
Did you see that Anthems?
You did that jetpack?
The hover joint.
I did the barrel.
You did two barrel rolls.
I wouldn't stop doing the barrel
rolls. You see that pole shot? The pole shot bounced between them insects. That was so good. It was really, it felt
Jersey
so
Anthem.
Good. Jersey Anthem, I think they deleted that from the Thump YouTube, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. See that anymore.
Wow, I think the Jersey Club stuff is all still on Thumps. Go to Thumps YouTube page and watch some dope documentaries.
Can't answer really much about quest design.
Right, so that's like another...
A little bit about story in that the way the demo opens
is
that you are on a ship or whatever. I don't know, the context is not clear, but we are introduced...
You're Strider. I paid it proper nouns. Uh-huh. I got this.
Yeah, okay.
So, you're a freelancer, capital F.
But where are you?
You're on the Strider, which is your mobile forward operating base. It's a big mech that's like a big, it's almost like a deer mech, or it's like a four-legged mech with like a big, like it's like a walker.
It's like a walker.
It's like an AT-AT or an AT-AT, depending.
But big enough to be like a fucking aircraft carrier.
No, not that big. Because it's like you and your crew. It's like you and like four or five other people, plus your mech, plus your exosuit, your Javelin, capital J. And you...
Oh, proper nouns.
Proper nouns, right.
It's like a leopard class dropship.
Yep.
Right, exactly. And so it's like you, a dude who has, like, no shirt on. His chest is just all the way out there.
He likes to laugh.
He likes to laugh a lot. He's like a face.
He's a very charming character.
Yes. I liked him.
Yeah.
Kind of like an XO type character in all black. She looked dope. And then, like, this guy, Owen, who's British.
Yeah.
Space British.
He seemed like this scientist, works on the tech
stuff.
He's
like your ghost, except he's a British boy instead.
A BB.
And you walk up to your mech and you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to get in my mech. And then, like, it pops you out on top of the mech with you and the rest of your crew. And, like, that alone was like, yeah, okay, that looks good. That looks pretty good. And they're like, all right, tap A to jump. Tap A twice to double jump. Tap A twice and then or just hit the R3 in to hover. And at that point, I was like, ah, oh, feels pretty good. They're like, all right, tap in L3 to start flying. And, like, I could have just done that for 20
minutes.
They
could have taken the combat out, just let us run around, chase each other. We could have done races.
That would have been fun. I would have loved to race you. You fly around, the flight feels so good.
It's really hard to articulate because it's the kind of thing that while playing it, it just, I never got tired of moving in that game. Mm. It I never feels got tired like... of like you punch the R3, you'd hover, you could tap B to do like this kind of quick dash when you were
there's like the side dash boost that were in Andromeda, the little like quick side dashes or that were in like even something like Titanfall. When you're in the Titans, you do those quick side dashes. Like, it feels so kinetic. It has, you know, it does, it stops short. So it's like, it feels like a punch where you stop moving. And so it's like, punch left, you know what I mean? Like, and it you get to like move around that space really actively. And it, you know, almost like when you see like a Street Fighter animation or something where the motion kind of comes to a stop in a halted, way as a way to communicate speed and power and intensity. It's that for like the little quick side that
the jittery stuff that like when you see the Iron Man mode,
right?
That is communicated and included in all the movement of this character, and like
all that excessive animation that helps communicate that it's a full motion.
Yeah, and it makes it feel even when like you're probably hitting B and it's doing a very much like A to B thing, right? Like it's just moving some X amount of space in the environment, but the way the animation surrounds that thing makes it feel powerful and also like. Not powerful,
right?
Like it's barely holding itself
together.
There
was a moment early on where it was like, I'm hovering in place, and then I just fall out of the sky, and they're like, ah, ha, ha, by the way, there's overheating. You gotta be careful.
Yeah. Oh, no!
You just crash into the ground.
I just crashed into the fucking ground. It was really fun. My exosuit just like, boom. Take back off. No big deal. You don't take damage from that, but it is a funny little thing. And they're like, all right, my heat's building up. I'm like, hey, how do I didn't, I was about to explain, like, hey, I'm going to overheat again. What do I do? They're going to just fly through the waterfall. I'm like, okay. Fly through the waterfall.
Oh.
Or, and that was the second thing, was like, if you go down, you start to lose your air cool. You air cool it. And if you're trying to go up higher and higher, you heat more quickly. But it's never, I never felt like I was, it was never even as severe as like, stamina management in Breath of the Wild or something.
Sure. Yeah.
It was just like a cool it was a way for me to be to juggle something, to juggle another thought, which is where's my heat at right now? And it wasn't.
But you're never really actively thinking about it. It's more like you pause in the middle of a battle for like you get a breath because like you fire enough some missiles and then your eye goes down and like, oh shoot, okay, I need to go to the ground and like just it's not it's an active resource that you're thinking about, but not one that is like a constant stressor. It's just sort of there.
It's not a sim. You know?
Right. Yeah.
So then you get into combat, and the combat felt really good. One of my fears from watching that demo was like, I'm just going to hover in place and like left trigger, right trigger. But the abilities that you have, which come from gear, one, are really neat, the ones that we used anyway. And two, they recharge fast enough that I always have something to do. I'm always chasing a combo. I'm always trying to do something flashy. And I ended up doing a lot of the side dodges and stuff like that. Your eyes just lit up, though.
Well, I was going to say, like, the cooldowns work in a way, and the amount of... Every move has, like, you always feel like you have something to do, as opposed to sometimes with cooldown-based games where it's like, all right, well, I use my two main things. I guess I'll fuck around with the other stuff that I have while I wait for the cooldowns to work themselves out. And you never felt that way in Anthem. Like, there was always something that was useful, often because of the movement, right? So it's like, because you have so much verticality, because you have so much speed, it's like, all right, well, because I can't use the ability that's really useful right now, I'm going to go put myself in a better position to use that ability.
Right.
It's like the boss that we got to at the end, it's like they have a weak point. It's like, you can't hit them from the front, but it's like, okay, can't use that thing that I really want to right now. All right, well, I'm going to work my way around to the back so that I can make sure that like I'm primed for this laser that I'm going to hit RB and charge up and shoot at them. And just,
there's really... like the pulse cannon where the beam or the blast, the energy blast bounces from enemy to enemy in close quarters. We were playing with
the freeze grenade.
The freeze grenade felt really good.
With freeze grenade.
It's a great freeze grenade.
It's a great freeze grenade. And also, lots of games have combos, right? Like where you're putting moves together. There is something very subtle but very powerful about the game actually just saying combo. Because it is like this visual representation.
I think they could dial it back just a little bit.
Probably.
But
there is something.
You're not wrong.
I enjoyed the fact that the game recognizing that you are using your powers together and like you did a good thing. And like we're not only going to have that implied by... Because often it's like, oh, everyone's tossing things. Like the aesthetic gets very confused very fast. Like not in a way that's like impossible to track, but one where you're very zero focused on what you're doing and your contribution. So when it does say something like combo, it's like, right, kick ass. Like we did do something. We silently communicated and did something together.
I saw you throw that grenade and then I waited a second. Instead of firing first, I waited for the frost effect to go to hit. And then I could hit it to smash the iced enemy or whatever. It also happened in the kind of geometrical like fighting arenas of just like, here's a turret. The turret has a weak point in the back where the fuel tank is or whatever. The Colossus class exosuit player would go up and like use the shield to block incoming like heavy damage turret fire, while I swept past another turret, did the barrel roll, the cool Iron Man barrel roll to get past, like, flying towards those and barrel rolling around is one of those things that's like, that had to be on the white, like the one page that has to feel good. They had to have said that in a meeting 6 years ago, and they got that.
And it's also useful. It's not, get it's around, not, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so like, get, yeah, dodge all the attacks, get back there, blow up the turret from behind, and then the Colossus turns and does this huge energy blast at the other turret and blows it up. And it's like, yeah, wow, that felt core. We talked about this with Into the Breach a lot, which is like the action communicates like dance or like storytelling in a movie or in an anime or in a comic. And that's how it looks and feels here, even though it's a handful of abilities. Like it, that stuff just worked. And it's also just really pretty.
It's really, really, really pretty. And it's not just competent for BioWare action. Like this was the kind of thing where it felt just, it's a good ass action game. Yeah. Like you felt not only powerful, but agile and just the, I was really impressed. Like, I think we went in with like pretty, not low expectations, but I was looking to be surprised. And not only what did it exceed those expectations, I came out of it going, fuck, Destiny is probably like too far. Yeah. But like,
I hear Destiny looks cool. We'll have to talk to Danica about it shortly.
As someone that prefers this type of gameplay, like I love first-person shooters, but like this sort of game is more in line with the kind of game I can imagine myself spending more.
Shades of Vanquish.
Yes, Vanquish is a really good.
I was actually
good.
Going to ask, like, how platinum does this feel?
You know, it's like, Vanquish is the only platinum first-person or third-person shooter that I can... Have they done other third-person shooters besides that?
Which Binary is their good action.
Was that them? Or that was them. Sega.
That was Sega. Oh, yeah, that was the Yakuza team.
Yeah, it was Yakuza. Anyway, but no, but yeah, it does have a platinum feel to some
degree. And Vanquish specifically is, like, a good touchdown for, like... The dashing, the movement, like that, like it's that's a game of momentum and speed. Like Vanquish feels like a ballet,
right?
And like this game has a lot of missiles, or at least the classes we were playing. Like RBLB like special power that for the class that you and I had to play, we didn't get a chance to pick that stuff. Was like a, you know, look forward, lock onto 9,000 things in front of you, and just watch this
missile swarm
halo
like...
go out. Where it's just it's awful. But it's beautiful.
Totally. There were moments when everyone else would be flying, and I'd be like, I'm just going to run because it looks good. Just land on the ground. It's like, hoo, hoo, hoo. And then the jets light up on your back because you can use the boost dash there too.
It looks so cool.
It looks really cool. It feels really good.
And it goes from like a, this like kind of, you know, jog to this like sprint, and then the things kick out of the back. And like, it just never, it literally never got old to jump into the sky, watch your character fall, click the right stick, hover, and just like look around. Mm-hmm. Like it was like a very, like it was just that like level of minutiae of control, which is like never in 30 minutes was like if they can nail all the other stuff, and that's
which
no easy lift, easy lift. But the one of the parts that I didn't think they were going to get right, or as right as they did, was this part.
Right.
And so it gives me a certain measure of confidence, or I'm now newly optimistic or hopeful.
I want to play this game.
I really want to play
like
this
game. Having played Division 2 yesterday or a few days ago, whatever that was, and then this, it's like if both of those things are similar in all of the surrounding ways, the moment-to-moment action here is scratching an itch that I haven't had scratched in games, I don't know since when, you know? And like there's this, Vanquish is really the last time that I feel like something was this fast and fun and like...
Tight in a way?
Yeah. I guess. I mean, it's actually.
You feel very in control, but it's extremely loose.
That's
but loose in a way that, like, jives with the way the machine itself feels. Like, loose in the way you're struggling with a.
Like, okay, I'm
cobbled together mechanical, like the type of military grade shit that a freelancer would have.
Well, like the exosuits in this are like battle mechs in MechWarrior and BattleTech, in which the idea is like they're not common. They're not made in a factory. They're handed down from generation to generation. They have a knight like quality, and so that also means that yes, they're kind of like held together by duct tape a little bit because they're not mass produced. And so there is a sort of like a feeling of mastery. Even in the 30-minute demo, where I could not do some of the stuff in the first few minutes, I was like, "Okay, I don't know, I like the feeling of this." But then, within 10 minutes, and by the end of that session, the sort of like do the barrel roll, slide down, drop out, get the shot up at the weak point, then lift off again, and like fly away, and turn around and look and see the storm exosuit player call like a blast of lightning down on this. Like it was like a certain fluidity to it, but like a fluidity of a boat. Do you know what I mean? Like a boat
that
doesn't
cuts,
turn on a dime.
It doesn't turn on a dime, But, like, when that motherfucker hits the wave and like, turns just the right way, it can take off. And, like, that, it feels like a machine, but it also, when you have it, you have it. It's your machine. You have it. You have control of it. And that is not a thing I expected. You know, I expected it to be a hovering gun platform. So that was really exciting. Nice. I hadn't been that excited about an E3 demo.
I came out, the moment anyone would ask about it, I was like, you gotta go, are you playing that game? Right. Like, you should go play that game.
Right.
And I found myself towards the end of the demo just doing shit because it looked cool. Like, once I'd kind of figured out the controls, I was like, this is not the most efficient way to, like, go take care of what I gotta do, but this looks rad as hell.
I got,
like,
this energy sword. I'm gonna fucking use it.
Or just the way I would fly. I would, like, just, like, dodge in a way that was like, okay, like, this is just, like...
You're showing off.
Yeah.
Did it feel like you had the space to play around with these abilities? Because, like, one of my misgivings was, like, the world just didn't seem like it was real terrain. It felt more like... more constrained level, like,
hard to say. We started in a big open area that seemed genuinely big and open. We ended up in a big cave fighting a monster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was a core mission. Right. My suspicion is, just like something like Dragon Age, it's going to be a blend of those things. But I don't know. And that is a fault of that demo, given that game's out in February to some degree. They have time to talk about that stuff still, and I hope that they manage to make that pitch, because I don't know what the full circle flow looks like. We saw a Cyberpunk demo, which we'll get to in a little bit, in which I have a much better idea of that, I think.
Right.
And I wish that we had gotten,
or at least you
could
fill in the gaps through your own imagination in a way that this still has, like, fundamental questions about a whole number of things. But a really important one was answered, which is that it's tremendously fun to play.
Right.
And, like, that was not necessarily a given.
Right.
So.
All right. Do you want to take a quick break? Are we still good to go? Do you want to talk, Rob, or do you want to take a break and come back?
We can go.
All right. Rob has it. Let's do it. Let's keep moving.
Boom.
Rob Zachney, tell me about your day one of E3 2018.
Well, day four.
I was saying, we're talking about, he played that the day before.
Oh, that's true.
Which one are we talking about?
All right, talk about your day. Talk about the stuff that we haven't talked about yet.
All right.
Walk me through the Rob Zachney LA experience.
Okay, so I came out
here
for
get
a
sunglasses?
Couple years ago.
Did you get sunglasses?
No, I did not. Well, after that fucking bag line, you think I was leaving that place?
True.
And, like, going out into downtown Los Angeles?
You saw that gamer line.
Yeah, and also the only place to get sunglasses is, like, Sunglasses Hut. And, like, Sunglasses Hut, like, the name implies, like, a humble abode. But Sunglasses Hut is not, like, you know, just come and, like, you know... Sunglasses for all. It's more like
it's not a socialist paradise.
No, we need to see your credit score before we'll sell you your sunglasses. And are you even cool enough to wear these? Like, that's
Nordstrom Rack, Rob. Nordstrom Rack.
Oh, fuck off.
They Norded sunglasses?
I Norded them.
See, this isn't gonna work. Oh, good. So we got Twitch swag, apparently.
Oh, did you get Rob? Natalie, did you get Rob sunglasses?
This is gonna work. You think that is going to work on this head?
You put it on your bicep. Oh, my.
It's going to snap in half.
That looks good.
That looks really good.
Face the camera. That's
Rob's a
look.
True gamer. Look at those hearts.
Look
You're getting
those
hearts.
Those hearts are for you, Rob.
Look at, that's L.A. Rob.
L.A. Rob.
L.A. Rob is here.
This is my Ms. Grundy look.
Ooh.
Anyway, so... Yeah, so I was basically after the bag line and the sun just beating down. I was just like, this is where I live now. I'm not leaving. I'm just going to become like the phantom of the LA Convention Center. So the other thing is that, and I think we talked about this a little bit on the pod yesterday. I'm a strategist. And so when I was booking my E3 appointments, the rest of y'all were just kind of like, you know, throwing things on your dance card willy-nilly. But I was like, I got a system. Mm-hmm. I got a plan.
I see you tap three times.
Yeah.
That was three twitches. Three twitch.
The plan was to keep Tuesday wide open for the most important appointments.
Sunglasses Hut.
Sunglasses Hut. As soon as I maybe...
So mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Didn't go to Sunglasses Hut.
And so I just kept, like, loading the boat on, like, Wednesday and Thursday. Those are really fucked, by the way. Like, tomorrow and Thursday are gonna suck.
Yeah.
But that kept Tuesday clear for the important appointments, which there were none. So I checked my schedule this morning. I'm like, everyone's, like, going through their appointments. Like, I gotta see this. I'm like, I am also a contributing member of this team who will be doing things at E3 day one, 2018. And that is how the first game of my E3 was Chaos Bane.
Was
Chaos Bane.
Is that a special version of the Batman villain?
Yes.
No, it is a
Chaos Bane here. No, I can't do a Bane. Right. Can anyone here do a Bane? Do a
Ellie
Batman
Rob,
Bane.
Can you do a Bane for us?
I mean, anyone can do a Bane. Like,
you merely adopted the chaos. I was born to it.
Like, you, I mean, it's just
a Bane.
Yeah.
You did it.
Except that was still too intelligible. Like,
it
that's
was.
Still like, well, like, there's got to be more like I got to aspirate into the mic a little bit more. Like, just like, anyway.
Sorry.
These glasses, I love L.A.
I
Rob.
I fucking love this.
L.A. Rob.
So you can ask L.A. Rob to do a Bane voice.
So, anyway, we'll talk about Chaos Bane on a pod
what's
later.
What is that, a fantasy?
Warhammer Fantasy, okay. Diablo, basically.
Cool.
Got it, cool. So, yeah, Monday.
What you think it is. But I did end up seeing The Sinking City, which was a game I was genuinely curious about.
Yes,
we talked
about
a little
this.
Bit yesterday. Yeah. And that is Frogware's... Lovecraft detective game.
I think one of the big questions I asked you this when you mentioned you saw it was, and it was a question mark over this, like, what are they going to do about the action elements? Is there action elements? Like, how do they handle the fact that Cthulhu and, like, Cthulhu cults are going to theoretically involve, like, shooting things, I guess? And so, like, what did you find out by actually seeing
it? Yeah, shoot them.
All right.
No, I mean, it was crude in a way that, like, long-term Frogware's aficionados are probably familiar with. Like, there's a certain...
It's like an crudeness, right?
Absolutely. It is the crudeness of when your DM, like, busts out that folder with, like, the artificially aged, like, note or something, or, like, posters.
I've never done this, but I've had DMs that have.
Yeah.
That have done it, and I respect them for it.
And so, like Frogwares always have felt to me a little bit like a studio that are reaching a little bit beyond their capabilities, but I kind of like that.
Yeah.
And this kind of feels the same way. It looks like the most ambitious thing they've ever attempted. It's an open world game. Like you're in this city, Innsmouth, Massachusetts.
Okay, that's an important Lovecraftian city.
Yeah. And
for what reason?
Fish people.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry, spoilers.
No.
Prince Sidon is there.
He's from India. Yeah,
he's hot. Mm. And then you kiss him. And then Lovecraft.
Lovecraft.
It's a little
craft where
fish
can get together. That's it. No, but there's fish.
L.A. Rob.
Yes!
L.A.
So,
Rob.
Hang on. Let me lay this on you, Cat. So
does L.A. Rob say Captain? Is that?
Cat. I thought he said cats.
Oh,
I thought he said, let me lay this on you, Captain.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, okay. L.A. Rob.
L.A. Rob is great.
There's a helicopter coming for L.A. Rob right
now.
Oh, that's
what
my ride. I'm going to LAX. E3 is over. Didn't you hear? Peace.
Yes.
All right. So it's like six months ago, Innsmouth just like flooded.
Okay.
Like a natural disaster.
Oh, the sinking city.
Yeah. And the waters aren't really receding, and a whole bunch of weird shit has started happening since then. It has now gone on long enough that people are just kind of rolling with it, and there are fish people in the city, and for some reason everyone is just like, that's like, oh yeah, it's the fish people neighborhood.
They establish their own society?
No,
they intermingle.
They intermingle with your society.
Oh.
Like the fish people are not the enemy.
Interesting.
There's a class of human
do they speak?
Fish. Hell yeah, they do, and they
English?
Like argue about prices, and they like run shops. Like
what?
Your
this
pal,
sounds awesome.
Your pal Vic, the barkeep, is half fish person, half human.
Sick.
I saw this BoJack episode. It was great.
Yeah, it does. It has some of those elements. Really, it's like everyone just there's a conceit, and everyone just like moves right past it.
Cool.
The other thing is it kind of feels like a private detective action game. Like you are just a down on your luck PI who came here to do like a main mission for
like a missing person or something.
Yeah. And
shit, fish people again.
Yeah. And now you're stuck in the city with your little
dog.
Yankee Clipper. Is that what the little The Whaler, Boston Whaler, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
So that's basically what you're tooling around. I don't know
what that means. What is a Boston Whaler?
Mm-hmm. Oh, just an outboard motor.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a little buddy.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're just like traveling through the city, and like in the downtown district where all the swells live, they're just like, hey, it's the Roaring Twenties. Who gives a shit?
Right.
Like, fish people can come and nor speak. Who cares? But then you go into the industrial neighborhoods, and things are a little bit, you know, more... A little more murdered soul suspect.
Oh.
Using
you
the Danielle words.
You're speaking my language, L.A. Rob. I can't wait. Yeah.
So you get like, so they cooked up a little like special mission for this, for E3, just to give you a taste of like what you'll be up to. And you basically like, there's a dame who has a problem. Her husband's gone missing.
Isn't there always?
And she's very poor. She doesn't have anything to really pay you with except, you know, the wedding ring. It is real gold. She promises you that. Of course, that's maybe all she has to remember her husband by if she gets bad news.
Oh, no.
Do you take the ring or not?
No. I'm a dad on my luck PI with a heart of gold. I don't need a golden ring. All the gold I need right here.
Well, I take the ring.
Yeah, and you know why? Because Patrick is thinking about the class of laborers to which he belongs and the way that working for free is going to screw them.
Exactly. So I knew it was like, going to go here.
So he's like, give me that fucking ring, lady, just like I did.
He might give it back later. But just, back you know, later. You get the pretense of like a dollars for exchange, you know?
Right.
I keep
he
the
didn't
ring.
Fucking give it back.
I Look keep the ring.
L.A. Rob's never given anything back in his life.
Well.
Brr. You wear the ring?
We're married now.
Yeah.
I married your husband now. If he's alive, he's my
he's
husband
mine.
Now.
I get to take him. That's
By
the deal.
By the way, I took that ring
Go
so
marry
quickly.
A fish person.
I took that ring so quickly, the guy giving the demo was a little bit weirded out by it. like he's like, what's your choice?
In this
like,
moment?
I'll take the ring. I'll yeah, just 100%.
Was he like?
Wow,
I don't work for free. Nice. I know. Like I've met that guy's shoes.
Okay, it's fine.
Yeah,
we saw Beyond Good and Evil today, and sadly did not have the opportunity to ask questions.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
An old ring is about all that's on offer in that deal. But anyway, so I go hunting for this husband, and you go into the neighborhood. It's
that's what you do in the neighborhood.
For a husband. Continue, please.
Oh, yeah, well.
You put on your nice
actually,
clothes. Well, you know, you put on your makeup.
Yeah,
you go hunt
you
for
go
a husband.
Husband
Danielle's basically nailed it. Turns into a comedy of manners at that point. and, like, at first I came across as very brusque as the kind of person that, like, you know, he takes rings from, like, you know, potential widowers. But people didn't realize that, like, that was just me, like, you know, being true to my class.
I gotcha. Right.
Anyway. So, no, you go on an investigation. At that point, it's very familiar Frogwares stuff. You go, you analyze crime scenes, you look for clues, you sort of rifle through people's papers and shit. And then there's a little bit of like Sherlock Holmes consulting detective. There are certain locations within the city that you'll return to again and again as standard reference points to maybe break a logjam in a case.
I see.
So for instance, and you also have a camera.
This sounds dumb.
I cannot wait to play this game.
You have a camera. The camera effect is so good because you take pictures of crime scenes, like, you know, mysterious shit you see. And the effect on it is so vintage, like 1918 era, like camera lens, that it's really gorgeous. But you take the stuff to the standard locations, like the library, the newspaper, you cross-reference stuff. And eventually it's like, I think I might know where this husband is going. And you go to his old quarters, and then there's a dead body. And it's too dismembered
Does
to
he have
see.
The ring? Does he have the ring? Does he have a matching ring?
He doesn't really have all the limbs that you need to answer that question.
He has a fin.
I mean, he may have. Look, there's a lot. You find a good healthy chunk of a dead body, but a lot is sort of left to the imagination.
Sure.
Anyway. So at that point, that's where your sanity begins to fail you. It's like, the Lovecraftian horror. But the effect is really cool.
What the fuck?
Is that what he says? Oh no, the Lovecraftian horror!
It turns into an Ed Wood movie at that point. This is, yeah.
Mama
I love that you just kind of undercut the horror of seeing a mutilated dead body.
Oh! It's like Waluigi's. It's like, oh, no!
It's coming to you in 3D.
Waluigi's had a hard day, okay? Yeah. Leave off Waluigi. Ask the Washington Post.
So.
WAPO, please.
WAPO.
But anyway, the effect though was very cool. It was like the level almost dissolves in front of you,
okay.
And the other planes of existence begin to break through into the world. And like it's a curtain that's like blowing open. Like, and it's that like it's not a cutscene. This is something
that's just Lovecraftian.
The curtain between this world and the next comes apart.
It's like blowing in a breeze from a window you cannot see.
And you have to, you find yourself wondering, is my world any more material, any more real than the one beyond?
Am I a butterfly?
Whoa.
Am I a man?
And then the discount head crabs comes running in. And you shoot him. And at that point, it's a third person shooter. You played those. This seems like a perfectly mostly competent one. Like it's fine.
You, left trigger, right trigger. You know.
But for a story like this, I don't need that to be like a great shooter. Like it's detective a means story. To an end. Yeah, the detective story is kind of what I'm there for. Mm-hmm.
Because the alternative is not having any of that stuff and probably limiting the storytelling that you could do.
And so then from this point, it gets you follow the lead to, you know, the fisherman's district. You run into another fish person who directs you to an underground warehouse. He's like, yeah, I've seen that guy around.
Gerbil, Gerbil, Gerbil.
So you go inspect it.
It's his name, Gerbil.
That's a fish people talk.
There are people, Patrick. Give them some fucking, put some respect on their name.
Oh, I forgot to mention the librarian had sewn her mouth shut because she'd spoken things of which she was not supposed to speak.
What?
And so she,
like cult shit or like
who knows? Like all the guy said is like, look,
she shit talked the apple pie.
Six months into this like crisis in Innsmouth, people are starting to get a little squirrely, and she's cool about it. Like she communicates, you can understand her, sure. But she just can't open her lips because they're sewn shut.
She had a hard time eating.
Sorry. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that food is as big a concern as it used to be for some of the folks who have been touched by this crisis.
I see.
Oh.
Anyway, you find the altar to some sort of cult, and then bam, it's the husband and the wife. This whole thing has been a ruse to get you like off the trail of whatever you're really after.
Good thing you took that ring.
I felt way less bad about
maybe
it.
Maybe the
at
ring
that point.
Is cursed or some shit.
I mean, maybe.
No evidence.
Well, actually, there's about to be some evidence. So because I'd done a good job of, like, you know, detectiving this whole situation. Sleuthing. I'd sort of tumbled to the fact that, like, things were not on the up and up, right?
Uh-huh.
And so when the rumpus finally, you know, it, like, revealed
when the rumpus
itself,
hit the roof.
Yeah.
As they say.
If you're going to say things like that, I got to swallow first. It's almost a mistake.
It was almost that was if I could have gotten a spit take.
Almost a PUBG.
It was almost a PUBG spit take. Oh.
So anyway, I just pulled out my shotgun. and she wasn't a widow at the start of that story. She was by the end. I just massacred this entire cult. All the cultist folks got gunned down. And
except classic for, Sherlock story.
Lovecraft, pulls out thank you.
Lovecraftian horror. Boom. Anyway.
L.A. Rob style, you know.
Yeah.
Was there another way for you to conclude that case?
Yeah, so if I'd fucked it up, and I wasn't driving the demo, I was driving all the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, the guy was doing the controls, but I was like at the branching points, I was giving him direction. If I hadn't investigated like as much, I would completely fall into the trap, and I would have ended up tied to that fucking sacrificial table, and maybe getting killed, or maybe something else happens entirely.
That sounds really interesting. That sounds way more interesting than I thought.
Yeah.
That demo would sound. That's out March.
Yeah, actually, it's in my notebook somewhere. I think it's March.
Okay, I looked it up. It says it's March 21st.
Yeah. Also, and then I turned that lady into the cops.
Hell
wait,
yeah.
Wait, how the fuck are you going to be out here like, I have to protect my class interests, and then the next thing you tell me is you a snitch. The fuck out of here.
Do you keep the ring?
Yeah. Cool. I earned it. I found her husband.
All right, fair.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Witcher would say, Geralt would say, like, yeah.
You know, Geralt is fun.
Sleuth.
When you finish the mission, that's sleuth.
I did a picture of L.A. Rob, just like, with the beard.
With the beard.
Right there. It's this picture. Right here.
Sleuthed.
I'm going to take this picture. Keep talking. I'm going to take this picture.
What else did you, is that, so that Sinking City.
Yeah.
Sounds dope.
It was a very pleasant surprise, if I'm being honest.
Like, nice. Especially since you didn't schedule that appointment today. Just came together. Sleuthed.
Strategy.
Sleuthed.
See, while everyone else was pinning themselves down to a rigid schedule for the rest of E3,
yeah.
I was like, what is the most valuable resource you can have? Flexibility, adaptability, dynamism. That's what I did.
Thanks, Uber.
I disrupted E3, and that's why it's over.
You also played Battlefield 5. That was not today. That was yesterday.
Disrupted that, too.
What's that mean?
You know how the joke is, like, game journalists are always pretty shitty at shooting? Turns out I'm not.
This motherfucker, he's about
God
to
God damn!
L.A. Rob.
Like,
showing up.
God damn, L.A.
I'm
Rob.
A little out of practice, but, like, I wreaked havoc on those people in Battlefield 5. It was glorious.
Would you, like, with KD ratio, what was your...
It would have been like double digit.
Okay. Okay, it's good.
Yeah.
Tell me about this was at EA Play yesterday or the day before or something?
And so Battlefield 5, as all DICE games do, like looks gorgeous. It is a hauntingly like beautiful game.
What was the map you played on?
Narvik, which is the Aurora, the Night Norway map, the Aurora, the mountains, tons of snow.
Yeah, I can't believe Aqua got Narvik'd. It's just like unbelievable.
Seriously.
I can't believe it. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
Yeah. So, and I was playing the Grand Operations mode. So is that
a new mode for this?
That's their new take on the operations from Battlefield 1.
Gotcha.
So do you guys play much Battlefield 1?
Very little.
Yeah.
Okay, so Battlefield 1, we like probably didn't pay enough attention to how cool it was and what it was doing. Because one of the like new things they introduced were these huge sprawling operations where it was a series of linked maps, both like geographically and thematically, and you would have like pitched battles over Ooh. These like giant chains of maps. And so it was like a series of like 8 different rush maps daisy chained together. Like these battles cool. like would go on, like if you played a full operation it could take like a couple hours.
And wow, like, I had no idea.
These things were commitments.
Wow. And this has grand in the title, so it must have been even longer.
it was an accelerated start.
Okay.
But what makes it grand is the consequences of one map are sort of carried over a little bit more into the next. It has more
gotcha.
Like for instance, like the developer was surprised when like I explained that during my battle I found an artillery piece, like a giant ass like shore howitzer. And
can
I
you
just
use
started,
it?
Yeah. Oh. I just started firing howitzer shells. I couldn't direct it. I couldn't, like, control it. It was, like, a set. I asked him about, like, where's this thing shooting?
So you wandered into a battlefield and found a howitzer, and you was like, yeah, I'll pull that trigger all day. Where's it aiming? I don't know. Probably in a good direction.
Look, it was a defensive emplacement. I was defending. I figure if the pre-registration had done its job, then it was going to be putting, like, it was going to be putting lead on target.
Did it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Because apparently it's mostly there for, it was day 2. He was surprised that that thing was still there because usually those things are knocked out.
I see.
In the first day's operation, which is the amphibious assault. And usually the shore batteries are causing so many problems that like pilots come and bomb them, people storm them.
So is it possible that they were aimed at the shoreline that had already been breached?
I mean, a lot of things are possible.
Is it possible that you walked through the woods or whatever, you found an artillery cannon, and you were just shooting it at an empty beach.
L.A. Rob giving us a fuck.
L.A. Rob loves pyrotechnics.
Look, sometimes you just gotta let them know.
It was part of our bigger plan. The explosions are behind you. Like, where are they at?
Why is he aiming in that direction? Send a group over there.
Send a group. Yep. Boom. Down. Yep.
But the other big change here is that... there's a lot of like construction of defenses and placements on these maps. And it is like the Fortnite comparisons are going to suggest themselves in a lot of places.
Really?
Like you run up to like it's not quite as flexible as Fortnite. It's not like you can slap these things down like literally anywhere, but there are tons of like little nodes where you can start building sandbag walls and then throwing like machine gun emplacements on top of them. You can throw up like tank traps.
That sounds more my speed than Fortnite.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And like if you and your crew are actually working together, you can like create like strong points that like don't exist naturally on the map. And learning how to, like, for instance, at one point we were defending this giant, like, again, it's a sort of coastal industrial town. You know how there's, like, rail bridges that run over canals right. and shit through, like, freight yards? We're defending one of those, and you have to be thinking, like, should I start walling off the open side of the bridge, trying to, like, create, like, wall off the length? Or should we sealing off the mouth? Like, where is the enemy going to be coming from?
Sure.
And that's fluid in the battle, and so like where you're constructing defenses is like rapidly shifting.
And, interesting.
Yeah, and so like playing this, like I was
sorry, rapidly in the scale of Battlefield, not rapidly in the scale of like Fortnite, where it's like constant.
Yeah, no, this is this unfolds. The constructions are very very snappy.
Okay,
but it's more that the battle is fluid and dynamic in the way the Battlefield. Encounters are.
Gotcha.
And so, like, if somebody, like, just barrels through a sandbag wall with a tank and infantry follow behind, the battle line just shifted and you got to, like, abandon your defense. Yeah, it is cool. So I'm really curious to see how all that works out, but also it was a little bit lopsided because I just smoked so many fools in that first map. I'm Rob Zachney.
I killed all the Nazis.
Well,
oh no,
Rob,
LA Rob,
LA Rob,
yeah,
no, no,
getting another beer.
Can you get me one, please?
Yep. War mocked Rob,
not getting one for Rob.
What's LA stand for?
It'll
Rob?
Take a lager.
What's LA stand for? I thought it was Los Angeles. Is it something else?
Luke Darmay? I don't know.
I don't know. German?
That's probably paratrooper.
I was wondering who was going to pick that one up.
I was just like, all right, someone must have something. Please throw it up there. One of those like Super Bowl Hail Marys where he's like, fuck it. Because like, if he sticks the landing, it's a fucking touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, normally I'm allies all the way.
Yeah.
Yesterday, not so much. like, look, I had no choice.
Wow.
Oh, you were following orders.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Okay.
I had no choice.
Not my responsibility. L.A. Rob doesn't carry the moral weight of these actions.
I thought I liked L.A. Rob, but I'm having second thoughts.
Wow.
So it was cool then. Thanks, Patrick, for the beer.
The American beer.
So,
actually, is this? Yeah, Sierra Nevada.
Okay.
There were a lot of...
It's a German lager.
If it were, that would be fucking perfect.
Rob got from the CVS.
No, I... You could make jokes there, and you didn't, and I appreciate the restraint.
Yeah.
I saw them.
Yep.
They're there, and they're funny, but no.
So the British were trying to assault the port of Narvik, and there's like a paratrooper operation, so they're like, you know, descending on the city. And there's tons of like cargo planes going overhead, anti-aircraft fire sort of knocking them out of the sky as quickly as they come. But a lot of these guys are landing, and I got down into the rail yards with a machine gun. And
did Chris Person message you on Twitter? I was like, hey, I love this. Can I use this as part of Kotaku's highlight reel?
I wasn't capturing.
Oh, damn.
Otherwise, I probably would have dominated that
Shout
day.
Out to Chris.
I would have dominated the highlight reel as much as I dominated that map. I got in among the cargo, like, among the train, the old rail yards and the train cars, and the British troops didn't really have a good sense that I was in there or that I was sort of mixed into their line of advance. And so I was just like, slaughtering them right and left. Oof. It was great. Like, it was one of those things, like, you know, Val Kilmer in Heat?
Yeah.
Where he's just like,
yeah,
doing 180s and just like massacring dudes in every direction.
Yeah, I do.
And like, it's bad, but it's kind of good.
Heat's so good.
Yeah. That was my Val Kilmer moment.
Cool.
Yeah, it was great. And because the British got their asses kicked, this is a fix that they have had from the previous game. One of the issues with the operations mode, as you might imagine, is that sometimes like a team hits a bottleneck and they just can't make any progress, and like the game gets kind of dull because for whatever reason the map
you're
is
just
really
waiting. At that point, you're just waiting for it to finish out, even though like it's predetermined that the side is going to take it.
It's like the Bears in the third quarter, where it's just like
Trestman.
Yeah, it's just look. They're going to line up three times. They're not getting anywhere. So you're just kind of waiting for the punt. Yeah. So they sort of fixed that by the maps continue to advance, but the starting scenario is a little bit different. So, and I'm not fully sure. I'm not 100% confident on all the differences, but I do know that because they had taken such enormous casualties in the first map, they brought, I think they might have had fewer spawns overall.
Wow.
Into the second map.
That's interesting.
And so our defense was a little bit easier for the second map, which was now a new part of the overall Narvik map, and it was daytime.
Is that the thing that you feel like there's risk that it just... I mean, I guess all they take is one win to kind of reset things, but, like, is there a risk of it just doubling down and snowballing until there's no chance? Or is it balanced in your experience in this one match that like,
I think because the maps are changing, like you're still kind of getting a clean slate on the next part of the operation.
Cool.
I think there is a chance of snowballing, but honestly, there's already that chance in the way the operations are constructed. Like, if you just get a bad draw, like, and also some maps just naturally have bottlenecks. Like, I got a strong Bad Company 2 vibe off of this.
Cool.
Love that game. But you know how sometimes those rush maps would have just that one control point that was like unfucking capturable, unless like you went full pro gamer, and got banned for racism. No,
never go full pro gamer.
You got
that's heated pro gamer. That's different.
Heated gaming moment. No, but like unless you and your squad like basically went full like no scope 360, like you couldn't advance. I think they're trying to get away from that a little bit. But
that sounds good.
I'm really into it.
Gonna play this game. I think it. What I've seen of it seems really cool.
I liked, and even, like, you know, irrespective of all that stuff, like, the single-player stuff in Battlefield four, was interesting enough that, like, I think there's going to be a draw for all sorts of folks that I'm curious.
Cool. All right. I think we should take a break now.
Sure.
We should. Danica, do you want to hop on and maybe after the break and talk about some Destiny Forsaken? Natalie, do you also want to do that? I'd love to have you on the podcast. Your first E3.
And also, you need your to come. You need to be on this baby. Podcast.
You give me the sunglasses. Let me give you this mic.
There you go.
Oh.
The gift of the Magi.
The gift of L.A. Rob.
Of the gift don't of L.A. Rob.
Listen to that enthusiasm.
Don't give
Natalie's hype.
If you have any rings, don't put them anywhere near Rob.
Don't let
Rob.
Take them.
All right, so let's take a quick break. We'll come back with that, and then we'll switch out one more time, and then we'll dig into Cyberpunk, because we
saw
an hour-long demo of Cyberpunk, so there's a lot to dig into.
Yep.
All right, we will be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There is one pink shoe on the side of the house. Is it a kid's shoe? It is.
It looks like, a
size
shoe.
7, perhaps. Maybe a 7.5.
The Black
an
Dahlia.
Oh, my God.
What? Welcome back to the podcast.
She was murdered in Los Angeles.
She was. Right here in this very house.
I fucking hope not.
I hate this. I'm sleeping alone in the living room on the couch, by the way.
I've seen a ghost. I don't need to see more.
I thought this was like a famous house. Like a famous person stayed here.
The Black Dahlia. It's LA, baby. There's stars everywhere. Stars are born here.
Just because they're famous doesn't mean they're good.
Are you the killer? Because it's...
She's too young. She's only 18.
She was only born in 2000.
She's not alive.
Well, she's always been like, no, I'm older than that. Maybe it's because she's a serial killer.
She's actually 120.
She's a vampire.
Not no.
True. You went outside today and now you're all some tired because of the sunlight.
I took some rest in Danielle's nice shaded room.
See, it's
feeling
true.
Strong. I knew Rob's middle name after taking my little mouse nap on the couch.
Okay, we should note Natalie Watson here, Danica Herod.
Hi.
Joining us on the at the table, at the dining room table, to talk about video games in E3 Day 1, it's 2018. I can hear my voice now because I'm wearing headphones.
Because
I'm
you production love that. Mode. It's
and
your
so
favorite.
Now I'm going into NPR mode. Welcome back to Waypoint Radio.
Waypoint Radio. We're at day one, and some days today we also played some video games. My mom told me that I can only play on the Nintendo, and that I cannot play on any other Xbox or in a PlayStation. My friend called. My mom said that I can't be friends with strangers.
Okay, well, I'm a child too, so maybe we can't be friends.
My mom said that you're 18.
Oh, well, you know.
She said you were born year 2000.
She might still be 17.
Who could say?
I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed. Tell me about Destiny Forsaken, the upcoming Destiny expansion.
Can I just say?
No, it didn't.
What? Jordan Mallory just tweeted me saying, that's Black Dahlia happened 100 years ago this very night.
No, it did not.
Jordan's
lying.
That's not true.
No, now I'm scared.
I know,
that's
but this is...
That's not true.
I want to play along.
There was not... That's not true.
It was the 40s, right?
Yes. It was post-war.
Yeah, but she would know because she was there. It wasn't really the 40s.
I'm a baby, so I can't speak.
So today we saw...
1947, January 15th.
All right.
We were fooled. What's time anyway?
What is, yeah.
Today, I had an appointment to go and check out Gambit, the new Destiny PvE.
My favorite X-Man.
Right, it's a very strange name. I hate the name.
I get it. Like, it's one of those situations where the X-Men character Gambit is so, like, everywhere that we all just think of Gambit, even though the word means like a strategy thing.
Yeah. I don't like the name. Like Crucible fits, I feel like, and Gambit is like, what am I doing? Some like doing the hokey pokey at like, I don't know.
You gotta show your Gambit.
Gambit
a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I took Natalie with me and snuck her in so she was able to play.
Just like in a pocket?
Like, oh, Vice, one person? I'm like, nah, two. And like, made them move some girl so Natalie could play next to me.
I can't believe you big times people at E3.
Press, look at my badge.
Damn.
My badge.
Media binge. So I'm first here. I think I'd like to hear what you think because you've A, never been to a convention before. B, never
true.
Like,
I want like general
so
E3
had,
vibes.
You've never had the experience of like sitting at a computer like in a booth.
I've never fucking been at a computer.
And you've
before.
Also never played Destiny.
And I've also never played Destiny. General E3 feels so exciting.
You were in like South Hall, West Hall, which
both.
Oh, you went everywhere.
And she stops to take pictures so much. She's like, "There's Crash. Zoom in on Crash Bandicoot. Take a picture. Hold on, look at Crash. There's Sekiro."
Why are you doing Natalie's voice as if she's one of the unforgivable videos from 15? There's Crash. I zoomed in on him. Unforgivable.
I said, "Give me that ring."
Okay.
You know, I like taking pictures. I like running around and getting as much free swag as I can. I'm absolutely one of the people.
Oh, we're shills now, by the way.
Oh,
we
cool.
all we do
the
is
first
go
thing we
around.
Did yeah. Was wait in line at the Hitman booth for a we were walking by and they go, "Free rubber ducky keychain?" And I was like, "No, sign me up for that." And I just turned around and I was like, "What do I have to do?" They were like, "Take a photograph." And I was like, "Absolutely, I will sign
already,
my soul for
already it." On it. You were already taking a photograph.
I was already.
We've just been like going around getting as much free stuff as humanly possible. We went to the Twitch booth and we're like, "Hey, we're partners, Waypoint." And it just so happens that both of our names are on the account. So we both got tons of shit.
We posted in the Twitch streamer lounge, Twitch partner lounge.
That
know?
Was so strange.
Damn.
It was very weird. It was very strange.
It's influencers and streamers. Like,
yeah, I didn't recognize anyone. No internet celebs of my, social awareness. But... so yeah, E3 generally was like, I read a Twitter thread today that was talking about how like depleted, seeing so many E3s after being in this industry for so long has like made someone,
And I think that I'm just so like new and fresh to this that I like still kind of was had that like, oh, wow, there's games everywhere. And also like the whole like my whole experience with video games for so long has been such like an introverted thing. Like even still, like work is the main.
You haven't been to like a PAX. You haven't been to like any sort of games convention.
No, I've never been to a games convention. And also like haven't been a part of like game conversation in a way that like I didn't have a lot of friends who played online when I was growing up. And so a lot of like the opening to that sort of thing has been through this job, getting to talk about games all the time and meeting people who are interested in games in the same way I am. So even just being around people that I know games get them this excited to like want to come to fucking downtown LA and and fucking wait in line for 20 minutes in the hot sun to get into the building and fucking wait for me to take a picture of Crash Bandicoot from very, very far away was like very exciting and good. So I had a lot of fun today running around with Danica. And the first thing that the first industry or appointment thing we did was the Destiny thing, as she just mentioned. And that was my first time playing Destiny. And it was so fun. I was like looking over at Danica and like in the same way that you and Patrick had like, oh shit, did you play this? Yeah. I was looking over at Danica. I was like, are you playing this? Like, this shit is fun. And it was just, I don't know, Danica, you want to explain sort of the Gambit like play mode?
Yeah. So Gambit is going to be a new spot on the map in Destiny 2 when Forsaken launches in September. And it's going to be, it's basically, they say it's PvP, PvE, but, like, for the most part, it's just PvE. It's, cool. Like, you're fighting, you're on a map with a team. You're fighting a bunch of hordes of enemies.
It's like a wave-based horde mode,
it's a wave-based horde mode, but the hordes pop up in different parts. You have to go to them and fight. And as you're fighting the enemies, you're collecting nodes, and then you take...
Motes.
Is that
like
called?
Motes of light were like
motes
a thing.
Of light. Yes. And then you're taking them to the center of the map and you are dispensing them. And once you dispense a certain number.
Like a bank.
Yeah. And once you dispense a certain number, you spawn a huge enemy on the other team's.
So there are two teams.
Yes.
Who are both fighting waves
of enemies.
We're
fighting at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Do you see each other?
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So
the only time you can see each other is when you get to a certain point in the fight or you've dispensed a certain number of motes. I'm not really sure what.
I think it's 25 motes gets you the opening to the portal that will allow one person from your team to go invade the other arena.
For 30 seconds.
That's like Dark Souls shit.
Yeah. And you're like boosted. Like you have like extra health extra strength and you go and you can kill the other team. I got killed.
But that's the only PvP stuff that's actually like, you're never doing like Crucible style 4v4,
6v6. Nope, which is very my shit because I hate Crucible. I'm pretty sure Bungie knows I hate Crucible because I've tweeted like very passionately.
Also,
about
you told the project lead and game director today that you hated Crucible
I was like, I'm not good at Crucible. Like for me to hit a milestone, my friends who are better at killing other people who are shooting at them than me have to sit around with me for three extra games.
And that's like a totally valid thing because that's just
That's games. You're not everybody's good at every part of any given game, and like there is definitely that's why a mode like this makes sense, right?
Right. So and I talked about, I'm gonna transcribe that interview and hopefully get it up by the end of the week. But we interviewed the project lead and the game
director
today, Scott and Chris, and I'm like blanking on their last names, which is bad because I love Destiny. I asked them a lot of good questions. One of the things that I asked them about specifically about Gambit was if there's going to be milestones for it, like if there's going to be a separate vendor, loot pool, etc. And so Gambit has this new character who's kind of mysterious, who like has his own lore that you learn, which I think will be exciting for like the Lord Shax fans. Like it'll be kind of like a competition for, you know.
Oh shit, right.
Who's hotter, like Shax or this guy?
Well, Shax is like a cool soccer coach dad. So
yeah, but everybody loves him. And
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's good. That's hot. That's good.
Yeah.
So is this new person anywhere near us?
Yeah, but he's like a more like rough around the edges kind of dude and like has a, like wears a bandana and like he's very cool.
Okay.
He's very, and I forget his name.
Jughead's
dad
more.
Yeah, like Jughead's dad is so hot too.
I haven't met Jughead's dad yet. Oh, God. I'll get there.
One of the best parts of the show.
Okay, I'm excited.
So after we play Gambit, which I'm very excited about, which will not be part of the Crucible menu. It will be its own thing.
So there's no chance of me, like, milestone. That's useful because, like, I don't want – sometimes I don't hate Crucible, but, like, there are definitely times even in Crucible where I'm like, I wish – like, I'm going to get into the thing with a friend that's just, like, going through different types of modes. And there are other times where I'm like, no, I just want to play this one mode. Right. And so I'm glad that I don't have to rely on Crucible to do this. I'm glad it's its own thing.
Crucible is kind of, like, for the people who are, like, the best of the best at Destiny when it comes to shooting specifically.
Right. Which I get because, like, yeah. If you were that good, I could see being really bored by the PvE stuff. And, like, playing against other people – I know when I have played, so it's the same, it's a similar thing to the story Rob was just telling about Battlefield, which is last year during the Destiny 2 reveal, I ended up playing some PvP alongside some other people against other journalists who are all like okay at these games, right? And it was like the only time I've ever really had serious fun with Crucible because it was against people who were just exactly as good as me or a little bit worse. And so, like, I enjoy that. There's a version of that game I know I would enjoy. But, like, when I go to play online, I just get matched against people who are so much better than me.
Gambit is just so much better. I'm excited to play Gambit. It's so much better. And it's, like, it's just more interesting. The terrain is so much cooler.
Yeah, what
the
is map it is like? Cooler.
There's – so the area that we were in had ruins, a beach,
Trees,
and there were like four.
It was
different
like the sun was out.
Parts.
Like, where are you? Where
the sun was kind of out. We were in, like, a forest. We were in, like, I think we were in – I want to say we were probably in part of the Reef, which is one of the new areas in Forsaken.
That's like so the Reef was in the first game. It's like the asteroid belt.
The Reef is where the Awoken, we're going to learn a lot about the Awoken in Forsaken.
Like, maybe we should talk about like the story stuff, because you also saw a story mission?
We played the first, I played the first mission of Forsaken today, a very early build of it, but it was still very good. And it's a mission where Cade Six is still alive. This is like right before he dies.
Spoilers.
Yeah, it was in the announcement, but Cade Six is dead. And you're going to notice that in Destiny 2, once Forsaken launches, the Traveler is getting like a full revamp and like...
Or like the tower.
Traveler tower.
Okay.
Tower's on the Traveler. So like,
yeah, okay.
Yeah. Also a spoiler, I guess, if you've never played Destiny 2.
I guess so.
Kind of.
I guess so. The tower is like so important. Whatever. Yeah.
No new social area in the Forsaken.
Oh, really? There's no reef area?
Nope.
That's a shame. The first game has a reef area that was dope.
The tower's getting expanded and more new characters. And so...
The only reason I want to be clear, I wasn't just being pedantic, because if it was the Traveler, which is that big glowing ball, they got a revamp.
It's not the Traveler. Yes. It's, okay.
Because so like if you were saying, oh yeah, they revamped the Traveler with like a Cade 6 thing, where it's like, is this like a big picture of Cade on the fucking Traveler?
It's his face.
Just like
I did
on.
Ask them though. I was like, are you sure he's dead? Like, come on. They're like...
Are you sure?
They're like, he's dead. And I'm like, okay, well, here's a fan theory that I heard. And I was talking about the gun and Firefly and how you didn't see the gun, like, use its proc. And so, like, just all this stuff.
A lot of eyebrow raises.
They had seen the theory. They were like, he's dead. And then I was like, okay, but, like, is the light going to come into play in Forsaken? Like, the light, you know, like, eh. And they were like, and I'm like, okay, all right, guys. Mm-hmm. So the first mission that I played, it was basically Cade just like guiding me through the starting area of the reef, essentially, and fighting a bunch of waves of enemies, and Cade's fighting with you, and it's like the usual Destiny 2 stuff.
Right.
It's funny, I was reading an article on Variety for some reason. I was just like looking up Destiny 2 Forsaken first mission to see what other people were saying about it. And the Variety article was like, it's more Destiny 2, whether like that's good or bad for you, like whatever. But I...
Classic day of E3. I played a thing. I have to turn in 400 words.
Article. Yeah, but I genuinely felt extremely excited about it. Like, it feels like this is really what was in the forefront of everybody's minds while they were putting out Osiris and Warmind. And I asked them about that. I asked them, like, do you feel like Curse of Osiris and Warmind suffered from the work that you guys have been doing on Forsaken? And they were like, well, like, we knew that Forsaken was going to be big, and like, we basically telling
me it's so similar to, so neither of you played Destiny 1.
Mm-mm.
Destiny 1 launched, it didn't have a lot of content. It then had two expansions, one of which was okay, the other one was like, eh. I mean, one of them, there was good stuff about each, but like, neither of them was like, move the needle for most people.
Right.
And then The Taken King came out, and that was like, yo, this game is actually really good. And
was it, so was that DLC, or was that like year two?
That was DLC, that was year two.
Okay.
That was like, if you went to buy the game, the version of it that you could get a year later was Taken King plus the other two DLCs, basically. And so it sounds like this is very similar to that notion. That's like, right. Hey, the new main area, which Taken King also had, which was like this cool hive. So Taken King was like the king of the hive arrived, and mm-hmm. he was mad. And it's tied to this because in that, the Taken King arrives and starts taking people. You've probably fought the Taken in Destiny 2. Yeah. And the Queen of the Reef, whose name I keep fucking forgetting, and it's driving me up the wall.
Queef.
Yeah, it was Queef.
Queen of the Reef.
Who, her brother is the villain in this game.
Right.
Yeah.
He's there too. They're all fighting, Queef and her brother. And they fight the Taken.
Her brother's Fart.
Her Fart, yeah. And so Queef and Fart, like, it's the Taken King is like, and there's an explosion. And because Queef does their magic ritual.
Yeah, so, Queef goes like,
right. And you think that she's going to do the thing to the Taken King and kill him, but no, Taken King lives and then does it back. And then she's like, the sheriff, Queef dies, presumably. I think. Like, that's the thing. It's a mystery. You don't know.
Yes.
Is Queef dead?
I'm pretty sure.
I left Taken King thinking both Queef and Fart were dead. And so to see Fart show up basically tells me Queef is also probably alive.
Probably alive, yeah.
So. But he seems like a dope villain.
He seems like a very cool villain. And a lot of the thought that went into making him the villain was like, they wanted a human, or like they wanted
a humanoid, like a
yes.
They didn't just want a
they didn't just want a mon, like
an other.
What the fuck is the name of the specific species that like the what are they called? It's been too long since I played Destiny. I don't know. There's the hex, the vex, the hive.
Yeah, they just didn't want like they wanted something
like a player character type.
They wanted
character,
someone right? that you could like relate to, mm-hmm. and what
someone with a fucking face.
Yes, and what they are doing with him is they are basically they're challenging the player to see if the player like is going to be questioning like their own, right. you know, light and dark, which I think sounds very interesting. It's going to be one of those like anti-hero, like
yeah, but it's like been that question. They have been. So as someone who's read the lore cards, mm-hmm. which you mentioned, they're actually adding lore stuff directly
into
the game.
They're
now.
Adding lore about. So just real quick, I asked them specifically about the Zol fight in Warmind, who is the boss,
right.
who they kind of like just right. throw you into without giving you any background. I had no idea what
this.
Was happening. Yeah. I asked them about that and what they're going to be doing about that with Forsaken. And they are going to be giving you backstory for his character. But what they're also going to be doing is adding a Triumphs collection, which is like essentially note cards or right. something, and you collect them in different
in,
parts
and
of
in
the
game
world.
You can go in and it'll be like
and you collect them and then it'll put them in order right. and you can yeah
it'll be like it was a fart got the spaceship and blah blah blah, blah
yeah
right. okay so but the thing I was gonna say there is like since the first game there's always been this notion that's like oh is the traveler really good is the light really good
right
and they've never really engaged with it it's just been this lingering thing where pretty much everyone knows the Traveler's done some fucking shit. And that, like, hey, maybe this is not so cut and dry. And we've been waiting for the other shoe to drop, the other foot to drop, the other shoe to drop?
Shoe.
It's the Boop. Other shoe. It's the
other shoe.
Other shoe to drop.
But, you know, you got feet on the mind.
You got feet on the mind. Mm-hmm. So maybe it'll drop this time.
Maybe. I'm very excited. It's going to be huge. They're adding two new areas. So two new areas. They're expanding the tower. They're adding Gambit. They are adding like a ton of weapons. You
could
can
you
now,
did you do yeah I was gonna say did you do that
yeah so they now have bows and arrows. The bow and arrow that I played with was one that I wasn't super fond of. It was like an arched triple shot.
That's
and
weird.
I couldn't
like the
get
regular
the arch
shot
down.
Was three shots
yes three
oh,
shots
weird.
Yeah but they have like all I asked them and they have like all kinds. They have like just straight shot one
right,
like
right, right.
precision stuff. And then you can also equip heavy weapons in your secondary slot.
Cool.
So you can have like energy snipers and shotguns, which
that's
is very
so,
cool.
So again, Destiny 1, you straight up could just have shotguns yeah. and sniper rifles. They were secondary weapons.
Yeah.
And I missed that so much. And it was like one of those things where it was like, I felt like I was eating my medicine. I was taking my medicine in Destiny 2, where it's like, they probably tested this. I get why they moved these to the power slot or whatever.
Right.
I get it. But I miss having a shotgun with more ammo, because shotguns in this game are cool.
And shotguns, it seems, are going to be the meta for Gambit, at least to start. Like, shotguns close were, up. Yeah. Shotguns were what they showed in all of the gameplay, and people then want, what people were using, like, while
they we were playing. Know people want their shotguns. Right. Cool.
So, yeah, it was very good. I'm super excited about it.
Natalie, are you going to start playing Destiny 2?
I mean,
I know it's not Call of Duty Zombies.
They did say that.
This is the thing, is, like, Gambit scratched two very particular, like, itches of mine when it comes to first-person shooters, is, like, the Call of Duty Zombies itch, which is those, like, wave hordes and, like, strategizing against specific type of enemies, right. and like, knowing, and having, like, a rhythm of play, which I really, really enjoy about Call of Duty Zombies, is it's very rhythmic and very, like, I am in control almost all the time because I know what's to expect. So it scratched that itch. And then with the PvP thing, I jumped into the other arena twice, and that scratched sort of like the other shooter that, or first person shooter that I've spent the most amount of time with, which is Overwatch. And like, okay, I have to really pay attention to what I see that their focus is diverted. I have to sort of like, keep myself, I have to strategize about the way I approach them and things
right.
like that.
There's an opportunity to, because someone's attention is distracted, to then get in right then versus exactly. like, oh no, I can't fight three people. I'll lose against three people.
Yeah,
right.
exactly. It's more, it's not as obvious and direct. It's more sort of like dynamic and fluid and moving around. And so it was fascinating that a game I've never even like thought of playing, or like even like had, I have no idea what Destiny is about. I have no idea like what gameplay is like in Destiny. I've never ever even ventured to look into it. And so Danica throwing me into the ring and being like, we're playing right now versus four other people, let's go, was like awesome, because I realized that like the things that I have like in these like safe sort of like outlets that I've tried so far of like, okay, I've tried these two games and I've spent a lot of time in them, and I'm like, oh, these mechanics exist in other first person shooters and they're not, you know, exclusive to these two games. And that was really exciting for me, and like makes me like want to explore more. And definitely like talking to the dev, or talking to the project lead and talking to the game director, they were like really excited about the fact that I like got so into it.
Yeah, that's like the dream, right? Yeah.
I asked them, I had a question for them, and I was like, what is it, can players like Natalie, players who like didn't even know anything about Destiny before, can they hop into Forsaken and feel like there isn't some like wild barrier to entry for them to learn about the story or whatever else? And they said that basically what they're doing with Forsaken that's different is that everything that is available after you like complete the story in the first part is just available now. So cool. Like you can get Forsaken and you can immediately play Gambit.
That's good.
Yeah. Which is nice. Like very rad to me, because I know I will play, if I get Destiny 2, I will play a lot of Gambit, and then I'll have to, like, slowly creep out.
Into the rest of the game. I mean, I will say, like, Destiny 2 is a game where a lot of the issues I think people have with it now are in hour 80 or 90 or 100. That first, like, 20 to 30 hours.
I love the original campaign.
It's a really, really smooth sailing. Like, it does just grab you and take you through it very smoothly. And it will, for someone who likes shooters, like, I think it'll bring you on board pretty quickly, and you'll end up really liking a lot of the content there.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Cool. Do y'all play anything else today, or see anything else? Take any other Crash Bandicoot pictures?
We've been doing a lot of stuff on the floor for video stuff that we'll be releasing. We have a fun video coming at the end of E3.
To be continued.
And basically, we've just been running around the floor taking pictures and videos and stuff, so... if you follow Waypoint's Twitter,
twitter.com/waypoint,
we're running around with cell phones, and we're gonna run and find some stuff to play tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow we've got.
I was gonna say, what's up with y'all tomorrow?
We're going to Annapurna in the morning.
Nice, good stuff there.
And then I'm going. Danica and I are splitting for the first time.
Ooh.
And I'm going to see. Speaking of zombies, Call of Duty Black Ops 4 with Joel.
nice.
So I'm really pumped about that. And Danica's gonna go see
Untitled Publisher.
Yeah. With you.
Stuff. Yep.
Oh, nice.
That.
Mm-hmm.
That'll awesome. Be fun.
I'm excited about that stuff.
Me too. So, yeah. It seems cool.
You should go with us if you don't have anything going on.
I might Tomorrow's a little...
We'll compare.
We'll take a look.
I think you are at Tomb Raider.
Yes.
But, yeah, looking at schedules.
I'll be in a
Shout
tomb.
Out to me running past Tomb Raider on the social video today and going, this game, you said, and here, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, questionable.
A little questionable right now. Damn.
Like, very loudly in front of their booth. Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, it's a
They funny. Had a cosplayer...
Oh, it was
at the booth.
Fucking
oh
bad.
Boy!
They had a. They I like had, Danica and I. I ran up to him because I am like photo op queen like, yeah, of today. Uh-huh,
yeah.
So I run. I like see someone dressed up near the Shadow of the Tomb Raider booth, and I'm like, "Let's go take a pic." And I run up, and then I just halt in my tracks.
No.
So it was a black cosplayer. He was all by himself, like just at the front of the booth, kind okay. of like, but completely dressed in like tattered, like bow. Like I don't really like know fucking, anything like, about
the natives.
Oh,
I don't know anything about boy. The game. But it was like the moment I saw
was
it.
He a cosplayer?
I
was,
like,
is was this- he a? Was he an he employee?
Was an employee.
Got you.
Yeah.
Got you. It was yeah. not just a guy who's like, I'm super into
no,
this stuff.
No, he was no, just, no, the he, like, I think he was, like, a hired cosplayer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got you.
Because there was, like, a security guard right next to him, and he was right next to, he was, like, right on the.
I thought you were painting this picture of this guy in this, like, tattered costume no. next to a fucking cop. Good.
No.
So, anyway, yeah. Anyway, we turned around very quickly.
That was, like, the
and
first
we were,
thing
like,
we saw at the booth.
That felt very bad. Like, yeah, it was. It just felt a little, I don't know, exploitative to, like, go it up was, and be like, hey, can we get a picture of, like, the only. Hired cosplayer here for some reason, like
yeah. Well, I hope tomorrow's better in that regard.
I'm excited about Annapurna. Annapurna's I've seen
dope.
Almost
Annapurna
everything that they
stuff.
Have,
Let's
but Natalie
check
hasn't
in tomorrow.
Seen anything.
Yeah,
so.
Their stuff is super good. So enjoy that. Yeah.
Super pumped.
We are going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about whatever Patrick saw, and then some Cyberpunk, which again, really, really, really cool. Really excited to talk about it. I also have my only fanboy moment ever in relation to Cyberpunk. So I'm already blushing. So like, stay tuned for that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to day one of E3 2018 right here at Waypoint Radio. We've talked about... We do need an air
what
horn.
What does that sound? Okay.
It's an air horn.
Is it though? It doesn't sound like an air horn.
Yeah.
That was Natalie.
We did Danielle's games. We did my games. We did Rob Zachney's. We did LA. Sorry. We did LA Rob's games. We talked to Danica and Natalie about Destiny and also about Natalie's first E3 experiences. We didn't mention that Natalie now has an E3 skin for her vape.
Well, that's a spoiler.
Is it a spoiler?
Edit this out of the pod.
What is it a spoiler to?
Already
Start
on
over. It's already on Periscope.
Welcome back to day one E3 2018. I am nothing if not a professional. Austin Walker here rejoining the rest of the Waypoint Radio crew. Danielle, we talked about your games.
A little bit, yeah.
We talked about some of my games. Mm. Rob, we, LA Rob, we talked about your war crimes.
It's not as big a crime as that vape stick that Natalie's rocking.
Keep both.
I'm not editing any
Keep
of this.
Both.
This is
Keep
all in.
Both.
I'm making a creative
Y'all
decision.
Are narcs.
Making a creative decision. This is all in.
All of it. All of it's
I'm
in.
I'm the producer here.
All of it's
oh,
in.
Oh, you're going to produce the podcast? You're going to stay up to produce the podcast?
You going to do that?
I mean, to actually edit
you gonna
it.
You going
to
produce it?
Okay, maybe that's editing.
Oh, shit. All right.
We have to have a conversation.
Okay.
Patrick.
Hey.
What did you see today?
I saw a lot of things with you.
It's true. We our schedules lined up. What happened is, what happened was,
your cycles lined up.
Yeah, it is. And the cycles where we want to go see
cycles.
The good games. The demo cycles was like, oh, you're seeing that? I'm gonna just go with you and see if
we'll
they'll
just
let
see
me
what
in.
Happens.
Yeah, they had to. We kicked the people who make Beyond Good and Evil out of their chairs.
Yeah, like senior people on Beyond Good and Evil. They're like, I guess we'll give up our.
There's two of them?
We were supposed to explain Five. This game to you. Yeah, there's two of them.
No, I know what I'm saying. That's like, they were surprised that there were two of us.
Oh, yes. But well, there weren't supposed to be.
There were not. It worked out. Neither of us had that appointment until last minute, so.
True.
Anyway.
Yeah, the game I saw to start E3 was Remedy's new game called Control, which was announced at the Sony press conference.
What is that?
Still hard, you know, they're being pretty cagey about exactly
Wait, David Cage's.
Oh no,
David Cage presents. Remedy Entertainment's.
Don't you dare besmirch that.
No. Like
that,
so, the trailer they showed at Sony's press conference, like, showed, like, a third-person action game where you can, like, pick and pull things up out of the ground and, like, throw things around.
Not in the Quantum Break universe.
Not in the Quantum Break universe, but it definitely has, like, sort of like a quantum sort of similar sort of, like, combat mechanics.
Sure.
And we'll talk more about this game once I have a chance to talk to Sam Lake on Thursday.
Oh, awesome.
Like, my interview
the face
and
of
demo.
Max Payne.
Yeah. Yeah, scrunch your face up. Mm. So once I have a chance to talk to him, we'll kind of dive deeper in that. I will say very briefly, like, the tone I was getting from the about, like, 15-minute demo that they showed, I was trying to figure out, like, is this more Alan Wakey? Is this more Quantum Breaky?
Wakey, Wakey, Eggs and Bakey.
It gave me, like, more of a kind of a horror vibe from the trailer.
Okay.
And then watching the extended demo, there's definitely horror elements. And then afterwards, I was kind of getting like, hey, is there sort of like a cinematic touchstone? Like, what are you sort of going for? What can people expect from that part of it? And they said, well, there's horror elements. I did like that they described the sort of aesthetic of thrill they're going for as the new weird.
Okay, that's
which is like a good phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for me, what I picked up on was it felt very 80s Spielberg, Poltergeist.
Okay.
Which is not, you know, there are jump scares. It is scary. It is weird. It is terrifying to some degree, but it is not like when people think horror, I think they think buckets of blood.
Yeah,
they think jump scares and like 80s Spielberg, like in Poltergeist, which he produced and apparently like pseudo directed, apparently based on what you believe. But like he had a certain sort of approach to like different kinds of horror stuff in the 80s, and this felt very much like
that's
that.
Cool.
That, that's a cool sort of vibe to go for.
We'll check in on that after you talk to Sam Lake.
Yeah.
You saw something else though. We both did.
We did.
We saw like a 1-hour-long, 50-minute-long cyberpunk demo.
Yes.
That is like this is one of those demos that I suspect people will be talking about for a long time.
At some point, this will come out. Some version of this will come out as
better.
A YouTube video.
Yes.
They did this like very endearing thing at the top. Was like, so like, this is going to have glitches and like it's going to have like frame rate skips. And it's like, we're still working on this stuff, which it had like
none of it.
I mean, like, whatever it did was like meaningless. Right. But it says something about CD Projekt Red and or they're like, hey, we just want to get like have our cake and eat it too, which is like, you all are going to go write about this, and then we'll release this later, and then you will all write about it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but either way, like, when they were showing The Witcher 3 for the last time, like, they did this theater presentation where it was very much an hour-long thing. It was like, hey, we're just going to play the game.
Right.
And we're going to show you a specific directed version of that, but it's one in which it's, whereas Fallout 76 was, like, vignettes explaining the game in, like, a very specific way. And Anthem was like this edited, confusing jarble of like.
But even
what
the
is
demo
this?
Was just here is a very small vertical slice of a 30-minute like fight sequence and like exploration sequence.
Right.
This is
just 50 minutes. We're gonna like boot up an early part of the game. You're gonna see some story stuff. We're gonna walk through a full quest. You're gonna see how a quest plays
out. You're gonna move through a hub. You're going to like we're gonna look at it, show you getting upgrades. We're gonna show you upgrading equipment. We're gonna show off abilities that you might get in the course of play. Mm-hmm. I suspect that some of that stuff was vertical sliced in the sense of like, okay, we're gonna add in extra like end gamey type abilities or like mid to end gamey type abilities in this early match. I don't think there's like super good shotgun that she ends up getting is gonna be in that fight scene.
Right.
But, like, that stuff was all very clear to be like, oh, look at the range of stuff we have.
It's a kind of demo that at the end of
driving,
it.
Driving, everything.
Mm-hmm. You end up going, like, I have a good sense of what this game is.
Yeah.
Have they answered every question? No. Have they filled in every gap? No. But your imagination can start doing the work. You can start wondering in an excited way, what didn't they tell me? Because in the demo, it's more what they left out was curious and fun and exciting, as opposed to what they left out was like, well, are they leaving that shit out because like they don't have answers to that? Are they leaving that shit out because like they can't show it? It was one of the most impressive demos I've seen in a while.
This is the most impressive demo. So this is my fourth E3. I've not been here the way that Patrick has since he was 15 or whatever. Really.
Right.
I came here kind of late and I've been here for 4 years. And
catching up.
This is easily the most impressive E3 demonstration. This is the E3 demonstration that you dream E3 presentations are, in the sense of like, I'm going to get a very holistic understanding of a game. I'm going to get something uninterrupted, unedited, no jumping around. I'm going to be able to report back on what at least this thing looks like. You know, and like, as someone who grew up playing Cyberpunk 2020 and you know, third edition and stuff like that, someone who grew up reading Cyberpunk short fiction, loving Cyberpunk as a genre, wishing there was more of it, being frustrated again and again and again. We've had the conversation, all the flying cars, none of the burning fields of oil, none of the fields of oil on fire. This felt like it got it. It understood that it is an aesthetic. It is an aesthetic, but it also is something about class and something about material relationships between different types of people. And I think one of the most important things, like maybe this is like where to start explaining what this demo is when you think about Deus Ex, when you think about Syndicate, a game I like, when you think about so many games in this type of fiction, there are, especially in video games, in big budget AAA video games. I think in the alternative game space, in the indie game space, this isn't so much the case. But in AAA, when you get Cyberpunk, what you get is a person in a position of power. Almost always. You almost always get a secret agent or a corporate agent or something like that. You're like a fucking down on their luck, like in the pits, grimy as fuck, like fixer, like, you know, operative. You are effectively a shadow runner, right? Like, that's the term that you would use in the world of Shadowrun. You're doing things here. You are a solo or a hacker, netrunner. Like, you are
barely making it by.
You're barely making it by. The game, the demo opens with you and a companion named Jack. So
hold on. I want to just set up how we watched this demo, which was that I believed Austin was about to have a potentially borderline religious experience.
That's true.
And so I said, we agreed. You watch the demo, and I'm going to watch it, but I'm going to take notes.
Yeah.
You take no notes.
I just want to bask in it.
You just want to watch this.
I may have taken a note. I might have taken one note. Mm. I want to see what it was.
The single note.
Was. No, I didn't do it. I didn't take a single fucking note because it was so cool.
It was very
and on
nice
this
of
page,
you.
A single word. Nouns.
proper
nouns.
There are plenty of proper nouns. There are plenty of proper nouns. Oh. The game, that the demo opens with, like, taking you to a very slick UI in which you're creating your character, because
good title screen,
great title screen.
Oh my god, they could have left the title screen up for an hour, and we would have written a take about it.
Yeah. go into the character creation. You can create a male or female character. We asked later whether or not there would be something that would break that binary up.
Yeah, it was like, well, specifically because a lot of the game, and they used the word like fluid, which is like, right. This is like a, in some ways, a genre fluid game. In a lot of ways, it's a, like, the player character, and like, there's no classes, right? You don't pick something like, I'm a fighter at the start. Right. Like, they're like, we want you to
you do pick a, there is like, so.
But I don't think you have to stick to that stuff.
No, correct. Yes.
It's you basically like, hey, do you want to like start a certain way, but like, you can spec in a different direction, and they're going to let you kind of figure that out. And it would seem very strange, especially, I'm not deeply familiar with Cyberpunk, but like the way Austin has talked about it, it's like, it would be odd that in 2077 it would just be male and female.
Right.
Like, that would be a strange way to sort of do that. And so we asked specifically, you know, one of the designers who was like, hey, like, is there, there's genre fluidity, there's like spec fluidity,
and there's sexual fluidity. We
and
know
there's
that.
Sexual fluidity. Like, what's up with like, with gender fluidity?
Gender,
and they said,
here.
They said, we're not here to talk about it right now, but like, let's be clear, like, we're aware of that. It's something we're thinking about. And they did up front say, like, the character creator is, like, not done at all. Right. They were just showing us, like, some stuff. So, I don't know if that's, hopefully that's, it would seem like a really strange oversight, especially given how much care and nuance is to, like, the other political aspects of this game.
Any hint that you might be able to, like, create a character who's almost, like, transhuman or post-human? Like, someone who's so heavily modded up that...
Not from the jump, because the modification stuff is so key to...
Yeah, progression.
That's probably that may be part of the story progression.
Right, but, like, if you take a look at Cyberpunk 2020 and the influences, like, there is... It's interesting. Like, it isn't like Shadowrun, where every piece of metal you put in your body, you become less of a human, your essence gets eaten away. But instead, it is much more like, yeah, you can completely, totally change your body. But like, the character that we saw by the end of that game had so many, or by the end of this demo had so many abilities, was showing off so many abilities, that they were someone who was very clearly not just flesh and blood. And I don't know if that's a, I don't suspect that we'll see like, oh yeah, that person is agender because they're just agender. They're gender neutral or gender fluid and are more machine than person. You know, there didn't seem to be any sort of like, oh yeah, you're all metal or like a blend of biotech, or you know what I mean? Like, it was very clear you're picking this kind of very, very You're building this character who feels like a cyberpunk, right? You are a punk. You are a cyberpunk who's doing some dirt to get by. The character's name is V. There is a character name. V is a good name. It's mm-hmm. a solid standard name there. You know, you could pick like some logos and like jacket shit and like cool, like there's all sorts of like very basic but quick like way to put your mark on the character and the character creator. I'm very glad there are multiple characters, that you could be a man or a woman at least. And then it jumps you in. And in this demo that they were showing, it opens in the middle of an operation, the middle of a job. It's like hectic in this really, and it's hectic. It reminded me a lot of Observer.
Good.
Except you are going in to rescue somebody or to recover. Rescue is strong. Rescue suggests a sort of
altruism.
A sort of like, yes, I'm here to save someone.
And also they picked, they picked a woman to for the character because there was like this woman in the audience who was like super fucking psyched for this demo. And they're like, you know what? Because of you.
All
right, this woman.
That's a lie. They said that, but if you look, they gave us all cards that were like, here is, let me break this down for you. Here's like, there was a lot in that demo. Here's some info. We played as a woman because he's like, was a woman in the audience who was super excited about it.
She was.
And
I wanted to buy into the story.
It was very much a showmanship type of thing.
Whatever. At least they built a demo to play as a woman, which is not the case like for the Assassin's Creed one, like when they started. Like they eventually got to her,
So it's you and your friend Jackie, who is like a Hispanic dude, big, bulky guy, like able to like, you know, punch down fucking walls or doors with his cyber enhancements.
A nice boy.
He's like such a nice boy. He's like
he is like,
he's like holding you back.
He's so concerned about you in like not in a paternalistic way.
No, or just a romantic way.
And it's just like you, like part of the character that you're playing or that's written for you is just like you were like a hard edge. Like when you have a good night out where like you have like gotten some credits or eddies.
Some eddies. It's euro dollars.
You are hard edge. Like you're going to go get a bottle of whiskey and like 3 days later wake up somewhere
with
a pile of bodies you've been having sex with. Yeah. And he's always just like, oh.
That's exactly it.
Let's just go get. Is this going to be another one of those?
You're like, fucking.
And it's
not
so,
in a judgy way. Not in a judgy way. No. Not in a way.
He wants the best for you.
He's just like, don't. Oh, I don't have it in me right
now.
Are
we going out again?
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
He's very it's good. So cute.
And in this moment, the two of you are breaking into an abandoned building that's been taken over by scavengers who've kidnapped some rich lady whose, you know, insurance company or whatever is paying you to go rescue her.
Well, the room is also full of bodies where they've been harvesting organs,
right.
You are harvesting implants.
Right. Mm. It's a classic cyberpunk like trope, right? And everything it is so hard for me to talk about like how beautiful the game is or how detailed and how overwhelming it is with detail. You know, because when I think about The Witcher, I think it's a beautiful game. The Witcher is a gorgeous game, but it paints its
pictures. It's not dense.
No, it's not dense. It paints with broadness, with vastness.
Well, it's only dense in those city areas.
Right.
It is dense in those areas, but...
And here's we haven't even said this. It's a first-person game.
Oh, right? Okay.
And the reason they did that, from speaking with this designer, is like, we wanted to communicate things that you can only communicate in first person.
Scale.
Looking up from the canyons of steel and glass and being surrounded by it. Being in these dense, claustrophobic buildings in a way that Geralt, even in Novigrad, it gets busy, but it's not dense.
It's not skyscrapers.
And it's not apartment buildings that are just covered in stuff. They're covered in bumper stickers and tchotchkes and, you know, old needles and
rubber
dirt
ducky
and rubber ducky keychains dirt and like all that stuff is layered in a way that is so like it is immersive isn't right. It's so lived in. Exactly.
Like within 30 seconds, like this is a place.
Right. Mm. Yes.
Like the walls tell a story and not in an environmental storytelling sort of way. I mean,
died.
But right. Yeah. But in a way that's like people live here.
Right. So you go through that place, you're looking for this woman, you find a body, already dead, doesn't register as her. You like end up going deeper in, you realize that the scavengers who are ripping out body parts are still here, and you get into a gunfight, and it's a first-person shooter. And like, I think at first it's like, oh, it's a little bullet spongy, but then like it starts to come together. And
there are numbers.
There are damage numbers, like Borderlands or something like that.
Right.
Given CD Projekt Red, I bet you could turn those off if you want to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at this point in the game, the character...
I might actually do that.
Yeah, me too. I think I might. I might leave health bars on if I can.
Yeah.
But not... Anyway, so you end up fighting your way through it. There's like a couple cool moments of like needing to shoot through a like a vent that you have a hacker who's on comms who's like hacking your way through the building so that you can get different pathways and stuff.
I'll admit, this early in the demo,
yeah,
I was concerned about the shooting.
Me too, 100%. By the end of that demo, I was not concerned about the shooting.
Early on, yeah. It didn't come across as like, oh yeah, this is some shooting. Like right. It was hard to gauge what it was.
I was like, is this Fallout 3? Which is like,
right.
Like, it's a cool world, but like, eh.
And it gets there. It gets to a place where 100%. I felt very comfortable with it. But in the opening 5 minutes or right. so, I was a little like, the world looked beautiful. Yeah. The density was amazing. And then I was just like, but there's a lot of shooting and I don't know how I feel yeah. about it mm-hmm. right now. Yeah.
You shoot your way through this thing. You kill all the bad guys who are clearly not bad. Like, they're okay. They're organ yeah. officers. They're bad guys. You're also a bad guy.
A bad
guy. And yeah, the person yeah. whose organ is being harvested is also probably a bad person because you finally get to her. You like what's up with her? She's still alive. She's buried in like or she's in a tub filled with ice and she is
unresponsive
but alive. You like heal her up with like a temporary fix. You scan her and realize she has trauma team level platinum, right? Which is like the first little inkling that this is a game about a world with about material relations, about politics, about economies, about class. Because she's like your character's like, oh shit. Normally the fucking trauma team would have just shown up to save her ass. Why didn't they do that? Oh, they put a blocker in her so that they couldn't. They had like a chip in her that blocked her.
Yeah, out of the network. Right. Like otherwise they would know so her body would trigger like a trauma team to come in without her having to do anything.
So you remove the virus, which is like, it's so dirty. It's just like an SD card in her head, right? It's just like, oh yeah, eject that.
She takes
that.
It out and just throws it on the ground.
Right.
And it's and just this,
instantly the UI comes up. It's like, oh yeah, they'll be there in 3 minutes, 180 seconds. And or whatever it is. And it's like, oh yeah, great. Yeah, she has fucking money.
And a timer comes up.
Yeah. And oh, it's not.
So, and there's very, a very specific line. I think
you have notes. I don't.
Yeah. I wrote it down because we both chuckled at this point. That was like, oh. So after it says, like, oh, the trauma team is on its way, be there in 3 minutes or 180 seconds or whatever, it says, your premium plan will cover 90% of the projected treatment from the trauma, blah, 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 blah. Right. Which is like, one, like the game, you know. Projects that like this is like some part of the rich society, like part of the upper class. At the same time, like still only covers still like 90%.
Even the platinum members of this insurance company are
which
only
says so much about like
yes.
In that one line communicates a lot about the world on down.
And then
yeah.
The rest of that scene is you go out to the like the kind of balcony from this abandoned apartment complex. And you have her in your arms. She's naked. Like this is a game that did not shy away from.
It was not exploitative.
She was naked because they were doing surgery on her. There was also a naked male body there.
She just was naked,
right? And you carry her out, and the trauma team arrives in a big flying fucking like APC,
flying ambulance
that like land. Well, okay, just calm down because then they all got out and they're fucking riot cops. They're like corporate riot
That's
cops.
The trauma team?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, get the fuck back. Put her down. And they like go down. They put down a like extendable.
It was a pretty cool stretcher.
Stretcher. And you put her on
they,
the
like,
stretcher.
They like throw it down, hit a and button, and it goes.
So tense. Because it's just like, don't get yelled at. It's another thing that I think benefits from the first person perspective.
Did it feel like you're in a fucking showdown with like cops on
yeah,
the street?
Of course
like,
it
fucking wired
yes, 100%.
Out of
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
It's,
and it where was, like, if you took too many steps yeah. forward. Just a bullet in your head, and no one's ever coming
totally,
for you.
Totally. And that feeling reoccurs again and again in this demo. There's a sequence later when you're kind of doing a trade. You're trying to do a trade for this, like, stolen robot, this stolen, like, drone. And it gets to a point where it's like, your partner's like, I don't want to sit down. If I sit down, I'm an easy target. And he says it loud. He says that in the way that's like, he's trying to make it clear he knows what's going on here. And you're like, you have a choice, obviously. Like, Jackie, sit down. And you sit down. Of course, he's right. Of course, it's going to go bad. And it's threatening and it's tense. And the main character, V, was like, the choices that they were making for her were to try to negotiate her way through this and keep calm and keep the upper hand. And it had that sense of tension that I do not see in RPGs, largely because you're always speaking from a position of power. And here, it feels like you are so disposable. You're just there's
at
a
any moment someone's right. gonna come up, put a bullet in you, and then it's just game over.
Right. There's a rule in so my favorite tabletop cyberpunk RPG is a game called The Sprawl. It's like Dungeon World. It's the same basic 2d6 rule set. And in Dungeon World, when you are a character, when you are the paladin, you are the paladin. You are the only paladin in the land. It's a rule of the game. When you're the wizard, there might be other mages. There might be other shamans. There might be other, you are the wizard. In the sprawl, there is a core rule, which is like, no, there are infinite hackers. You're not a thing. Like, you want to be the street samurai? There's a billion, like, soldiers. There's a billion. Like, you're so replaceable. And this game presents that feeling in all the dialogue options, at least at the 50-minute demo that we saw, which helps because it makes the opportunity you get to, like, oh, this could be the one. This could be the one that gets me my foot in the door with the real fixer, the real players, mean something because it so firmly sells that feeling of threat and that feeling of being on the edge of what is the word, precarity, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, in that sequence you're talking about where there's something interesting where it does, where usually dialogue choices in a game, it pauses the action. And there are moments where, like, the game stops and it's like, okay, like, you can scroll through the options, think what you want to do. But specifically in this moment where the other character is, like, kind of, like, saying, like, hey, like, I don't feel comfortable with things, like, I'm kind of asserting himself, and then you have this other character who's pushed, you know, the one of the, not quite enemy, but, like, it's a hostile sort of a group is, like, pushing back. You have dialogue options that you can continually rotate through, and one that's always coming up is, like, pull your gun out. Oh, and they're different
throughout, like,
it's always at the bottom.
25-minute section, and it's like, and you can hit the Y button to do it. It's like a specific pull your gun out button.
Like, in unholster. It's not just pick the option, and then it does it. It's like, hit Y, you will unholster, and then communicate something. And, like, the person running the demo is constantly saying, no. No, no. Like, they're always waiting for another option.
I'm going to talk about
it. But it's always there. And eventually, you are forced to bring out your gun because the game forces your hand or the scenario forces your hand. But what's interesting is, like, that option is always there. And so then immediately, when the demo is over, you're wondering, like, well, what would have changed had I pulled that gun out immediately?
Branch, right? Mm-hmm. It's so funny to me because we think about, like, the Deus Ex. We think about, like, this style of immersive sim that is about dialogue and about kind of conversation choices on top of being about exploration and stuff like that. And most of the time, the kind of way that we talk about it, not with Prey actually so much, but with so many other ones, like, oh, did you shoot your way through the fight or that warehouse, or did you sneak your way through it, or did you hack your way through it?
It's very Human Revolution. Those are the three clear paths.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Here it didn't feel like that. It felt like there were lots of ways it could have gone loud in which your character would have been placed in different allegiances, right? So the main bulk of this game, so you do the bit we talked about, you recover this kind of a higher class person, get them to the trauma team, you go back to celebrate or like to kind of like recover, you wake up, V wakes up next to a dude who's like, I guess I'll get the fuck out of here, like, I guess you're done with me. And
there's like bottles everywhere and stuff like that.
Walk around your bedroom, and immediately that's such a distinction from The Witcher, right? Like, Geralt doesn't have a home. Or Geralt does have a home. It's far away. Kaer Morhen.
But this seems like a place
away.
You're going to be coming back to. Yes. There's probably customization.
Checking your mail.
It is meant to be a place to feel like home, not just like you open up the map and it's like, technically, this is your home. Like, right. But you don't spend any time there.
You know, and you get a call that's like, there's lots of good video calls. The UI in this game is, we saw other games today, and there were some that just didn't show UI at all, and there's some that had good UIs. I think Spider-Man has a pretty good UI. Mm-hmm. But every UI I saw felt like looking, after seeing Cyberpunk, it felt like looking at a UI from the Xbox generation, like the original Xbox. It felt like the difference between Blades. An Xbox, a late, no, pre-Blades, Xbox, not even Xbox 360.
Oh, okay.
Like, the sort of, like, if you go back and play a game like, you know, Gun, or go back and play a game like Mech Assault, everything's so big and blocky, you're like, oh, that's clearly from a long time ago. Cyberpunk's UI is so slick that it makes me feel that way about UI that I think is actually totally fine, but it reminds me that UIs are historical. They're not, even though you don't notice a UI in the moment of playing something, 10 years from now, we will look back at the games we're playing now and be like, ugh, that hideous UI. Mm-hmm. This feels like one of the games that will make me feel that way. It feels like a transition there. And so you get this like really slick, you know, phone call comes in from Jack. He's like, we got an opportunity. And you're like, oh, I have to go take care of some stuff with my cyber doc, my Ripper doc, who has to install some new shit. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, yeah, sure. But like, we got an in with this guy, Dex, who's like Cyberpunk Rick Ross. He's Cyberpunk Rick Ross.
Okay. Yeah, that is 100%.
Giant golden arm, beautiful beard, burgundy suit. Got a cigar. He's so good. He's so fucking good.
He gives no fucks about you. He's just like, ah.
Yeah.
Maybe you can go do this thing.
Maybe you can
do
this thing. Prove to me that you can do this thing. Here's what happened. These scavengers. Okay,
the way the mission briefings happen.
Oh my
God. He's like,
God.
Hey, just take this chip, and you, this guy could fuck you up. Like, a huge part of this game is, like,
that feeling
you are often dealing with something that you could put it in your brain, and then it's all over. And, like, it's putting chips in, taking chips out, and you just can't trust anybody. You just have to go on guttural instinct. And he hands over this chip, and you slide this SD card into your brain, and then, like, what normally would be, like, game cuts away to, like, weird UI thing that makes no sense in the world, but, like, this is how we're going to show you a map and explain, like, how they had, but, like, you put an SD card in, and then he's talking over clearly something he's prepared for you to explain the mission you're about to do.
No stutter. It absorbs your field of vision in a way that is scary, in the sense of, like, I've given myself over to this thing. He's next to me. He's not in my head. He's next to me in this limo as we drive around the block and could just kick me out.
And my visual cortex is now just his.
Right, and you pull the chip out when you're done doing the briefing, and your sight is still foggy for a second. And again, there's this feeling of... It's so fucking... Last year, this time, a month ago last year, in May, I came out to see Far Cry 5. Oh, the pressure. Dan, he talks about the pressure. He talks about the feeling of threatening, the feeling of being at threat, the feeling of being in Far Cry 5. The idea was you're going to always worry that the cult could be anywhere. Fucking Cyberpunk's feeling of threat and pressure is that it's not a cult. It's anybody. Everybody is so put upon and so down on their luck that everyone is looking for a leg up. Everyone is looking for any opportunity, and many people don't see you as a person at all, and they will just fuck you over.
Like, a lot of games this E3
is, and it is, wow. And it is,
and there's been a lot of games this E3 that have used the term oppression.
Right,
it's become actually sort of like a trendy buzzword.
Yeah,
and like this was the only game I saw this E3 that felt like you felt oppressed, and also everyone else is oppressed, right, too. And so often when people are trying to get theirs, it's just because there's nothing to get.
Which is very Witcher, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've heard the two of you talk about The Witcher for so many times, for so long now. And one of the things that The Witcher does well, or can do well at least, is represent people as agents who have interests. And that even the worst of them tend to be coming from a place. And I don't mean that in the, like, gray morality sense, but I mean that in the way of, like, that's part of what good characterization can look like. And this, you know, it's a 50-minute demo. Who knows if they carry that off all the way. But the main plot of this little mini arc is, like, you get this mission to prove to this guy that you're good enough to basically go on missions for him, to be one of his agents.
One of his contract workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And you get the mission, which is like, okay, these people stole this robot, this drone that's really powerful, which is really meaningful for some reason, from a military hardware company called Militech, and you have to go recover it. And you could just go, there's a waypoint, you just go to it, you just go do it. But the character says, like, oh, well, one thing I could do. So it goes into another UI element where she's able to look at, like, the blueprint for the thing or something. Mm-hmm. And she sees that it's made by Militech. And because of that, she's able to pursue a different line of investigation, which is, I could just call the person who... There's a contact from Militech who's the one who's upset that this thing got stolen. That's how people know it got stolen, because she's on the lookout for it. So you could just go and try to get it yourself. But what your character, what V tries to do, what this player did, it was like, I'm going to call the corporate contact and just go to her and be like, hey, I can help you find this thing. Give me info. And so you set up a meet underneath, like, basically in the LA Canal underneath a bridge. Do you know what I mean? In the dried out LA Canal. It's a night city, but night city is kind of a
Northern
mega city.
Northern California is where they said it was.
Yeah. Set. It's like a sprawling mega city across the California coast. And you go to meet her, and it's this, again, super tense moment where she doesn't fucking believe that you're not involved with this. And eventually gives you this, like, $50,000 chip, like, cred card, to be like, all right, fine, like, you've talked me into it. They do that. They put it in your fucking brain.
But before this meeting actually occurs, like, there's a moment where you're on the bridge looking down on the characters, and she's gone to what was it called?
The Ripper Dock,
yeah, and, like, you get some upgrades, which is some gnarly body horror shit that, like, happens.
It doesn't go too far.
It goes far enough to make that I was in my seat going, and then the moment where it would go too far for a lot of people, it pulls away and lets your imagination do the rest of the work, which is really effective. But one of them you get is where, like, you know, you can analyze enemies, it gives you levels, health, like, how powerful they are. And you look down, and it's, like, very clear that, like, the vehicle they have, the level that they are, like, you should not fight these people.
Right.
And yet, the demo went through a moment where she's going to collaborate with these people, or at least, like, play along with them and get this credit card. But you also had the opportunity, again, to hit Y, draw a gun.
In fact, like, that moment was cool because it wasn't even draw a gun. It was take gun. I think it was
you could take the gun off the guy.
Take the bodyguard's gun who had it pointed at you.
And the first one in the demo was like, you probably shouldn't do this. You probably shouldn't do this.
But I'm going to do it.
But you could do
it. I would do. I want to see it. You know,
You hit quick save.
I hit quick save. I want to see it. Yeah. At that point, you end up going to this mission. They give you the chip. You go. You try to get the robot. It all falls apart, of course, in a beautiful way. And incredible gunfight, which we should talk about again in a second when we like talk about what combat looks like. But it ends on this moment of the woman who is the Militech corporate sponsor who wants
this. Lines here.
Really good lines. I wish I'd written those down, but I was basking. And it ends with her basically being like, you know, maybe if you keep up trying to hustle, in a couple years you could be someone important and meaningful like me. Huh. You're like, you little bitch. Like, you're nothing to me. And there's this dread sense that is like, I can see why that would be appealing for my character. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the arc of this game is, but that feels like it will be a constant temptation. In fact, even from character creation, one of the things you do is create your character's backstory. Like, it's, you know, you're picking three options on four or five different questions.
Sure.
So it's like, oh, are you someone who's like a hacker? Are you someone who's like a street samurai with like cyber implants? Or did you used to work for a corporation? Like, what was your situation? And so, like, I can imagine even from the jump being someone who has those connections and who could go in that direction. And I think that's the fact that feels at play, and that they, based on talking to people there, talking to someone there, they know that that is the core thing, that is part of
they want to tempt you.
They want to tempt
because you. Like, if most games are a power fantasy,
right?
And like, you're stunned. This is a setting about like the underprivileged, the underclass.
Yeah.
And yes, you want to get yours. You want to, you know, move up the chain. But what does it mean to move along that chain? It seems like this game is going to constantly a push and pull between like, are you tricking those people to move ahead, or are you actually becoming the thing that you hate?
Or are you not engaging with that at all, and instead are working? Like, there seems like there is. It's not even that is not doesn't seem in this gameplay demo.
It's not a binary.
You could easily just be. I'm a mercenary. I'm just a merc. You know, I'm just working my way through. I'm better than the scum on the bottom, and I'm better than the people on the top because fuck them. But I'm still like, there seems to be a range of potential roleplay options, which I'm not surprised by.
Yeah.
Two other big things. One. We talked about the density of like apartments and interiors. This game had like a Fallout moment for us, I think. The moment of like the Fallout 3, the doors open, the Skyrim or the Morrowind or the Oblivion moment.
Where you get a sense of the world in a way that's like, oh my god. Like,
yeah.
Whereas a Fallout in a Morrowind or a Skyrim is like, oh, look how big this place is. I can see that mountain. I'm going to go there. This is like the opposite. Of that,
which is like, I can't believe
how
there's so much here that doesn't matter, but it's here anyway.
The amount of NPCs that you see around you, and usually when you see a game dense with NPCs, they're just packed into a place and they're just kind of wandering aimlessly. Like, you look around, and this is like, you cannot keep up with the amount of individual things that are happening around you. Like, it is, it was a moment where, like, how could they finish this game?
Yeah.
Like, it is unbelievable.
It's writing a very big check. I'm like, I...
There are literally hundreds of NPCs in these, like Shibuya Crossing sort of, like, situations where it's just, like, you look around and, like, there's vendors. And, like, there are so many things in the UI where, like, as you're looking around, like, there are 1,000 things I could go do right now. Yeah. Like, I was getting anxiety over how, like, the amount of things you're going to be able to do in this game in a really exciting way.
Right.
But, like, it's... You're right about a big check. I do think they are capable of cashing it, but it is a game that made me feel bad for other games.
Yeah, the number of times we had a running joke, which was like, oh, they're making a sequel to blank. Oh, this is a sequel to Syndicate, the cyberpunk shooter. Oh, this is a sequel to Deus Ex. Oh, this is a sequel to Fallout. Like, the ways in which there are dialogue options, the ways in which, like, we're not even talking about, there's a stat system, you're leveling up, you're choosing new skills, you get perks, like, all that stuff is there. And then there's the combat, which... whatever misgivings we had in that first encounter, by the end, in which it becomes this wall, the way that this character was built, running on walls, hacking into people. There's a moment where...
Oh, the virus.
Fuck, man.
Oh, my God.
So she knocks out a person, and he goes into his brain with a wire, right? Hacks from, like, drops the wire out from...
It's a USB cable, basically.
Okay. From her brain, puts it into his brain, and it's like, oh, I'm going to access your squad's whole network, and I'm going to... add a back door to the rest of the people in your squad.
It's like a reason. So, like, when you if you get up behind an enemy, you can do non-lethal takedowns. Right. And so, maybe that there'll be more implications of that. Yeah. But one of the things you can do in a non-lethal takedown is that you can then jack into that character, and then you have options, including manipulating these squads.
So in this case, it was like, okay, well, we have enough points or whatever to turn there are two squad guys down below in the squad, and she turns off the gun. She like makes the gun unfireable for one of them, and then she reveals
she jams it with a virus.
With a virus, she right aww. Exactly. Then she reveals that she has. Do you remember in the original like teaser trailer for this, the woman who had the blade yeah. arms? Mm-hmm. She mm-hmm. has those.
Oh,
and she just jumps down and knifes the one guy with the gun that works. And then turns and looks at the guy whose gun doesn't work.
And he's like, sitting there going click. Like,
We've seen this stuff. We've seen it in Batman. We've seen it in other things. But here, partially because of the perspective, partially because of the fidelity, it's scary. It's like, oh, you are a thing to be feared. And not only in a power fantasy way. It is just like, yo, like this is an incredible combat experience moment. But it is also like...
This is the Neuromancer, like yeah, we've made, you, like the devil
this is Molly here. Millions. Yeah, exactly. 100%. Like wow. That is the closest I've seen of a game for Molly. Like, exactly. On top of like guns that do wild shit, bullets that bounce off. Like,
bullets that bounce off walls. Yeah, there was a weapon they show where like, someone's hiding behind cover, and it's just like you get like the straight up, like you see the line and how it bounces off, and it's like ping, 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 and it goes around. And there was another one that was like a swarming missile where you just like generally aim in the direction
of like
someone.
It's like a smart pistol from Titanfall, but it's a rifle. A shotgun that can blow through cover or that can like load up different energy rounds, like all sorts of neat, like,
and they don't feel like magic. Because this is another cyberpunk game. Sometimes I feel like you're...
These feel weighty and material. Yeah. And, like, they feel heavy. They feel like... And partially because I think some of that is reinforced in some of the mechanics, right? Like, one of the... Besides the eye upgrade that she gets, she also gets a hand upgrade that lets her use locked weapons. Which presumably is like, oh, yeah, all weapons are bio-locked. But now with this, you can, like, pick up...
Magic, yeah.
You can pick not up... Magic, not pick them up from... But, like, you can hack into them and use them...
all guns are your gun.
All right, exactly. Which I love the idea of like, oh, or I could not get that upgrade, right? Like, could I do a version of this build where I'm like, I don't care about that. I'm using all melee weapons, so I can use any melee weapon. Right. Or I'm really going into self-modification. I get what that game is. I get that that's the loop. It's going out on missions, going out on side missions. It's exploring Night City. There's a car chase. There's like... Which I didn't expect there to be cars in this game, even though there was a car in that trailer. I need to go back and watch that trailer because there were sequences. We saw the robot boxing gym,
which
you may recall in the trailer. That's just in that game where there is just like...
You're just in an area and you're just watching them spar. And presumably you could sit there because it's CD Projekt Red. You could probably sit and watch that for 5-10 minutes.
Oh my God.
And it would just continue
to
be
go over
stuff.
And interact with it, which was an option.
And actually
right?
the Ripper doc that you go and talk to, like at the conclusion of that sequence, is that he's also just like, he's this older crusty dude and he's actually obsessed with boxing, but I think he's actually watching an actual
He might be watching an old boxing match, yeah.
But either way, like he like finishes like doing your eye stuff and he's just like, I'm gonna go watch this boxing match. And like it's all that ambient stuff, which CD Projekt Red is so good at, there's something different about this one because it's so tightly packed, because like the world is both huge and also like incredibly claustrophobic. There's something about the density that feels just on a different level than I've experienced in other games. Where other games have like, oh, you go to a square and like there's like a that's where all the stuff is. Like this game, every corner it feels like there's going to be something else.
I feel like we've spoken a lot. I've said a lot. Oh, the jump from the Xbox or the PS2 era to the Xbox 360, PS3 era. We're not going to have another jump like that because the jump to HD is so meaningful and it's like hard to... This is the first time I've seen a demo that's like, wait, this is what games are like now, visually? So dense, so packed with detail, so... And to an effect. Like, I the thing I want to underscore here is that it was not just a pretty game. We see lots of pretty games. E3 is filled with pretty games. It's filled with games that do attempt some sort of density or that can impress you with technology. We saw Beyond Good and Evil 2, and that game, that demo ends with a very No Man's Sky style thing in which you go like, hey, 3 minutes ago, we were in a temple inside of a building on this planet. Then we zoomed out and showed you at like the street level. Then we showed you the kind of like neighborhood level. Then we showed you the citywide level. Then we showed you the planet or like the region wide, then the planet wide, then the galaxy wide. Like zoom, zoom, zoom.
From technology in service of what?
Exactly.
And there was no effect. The Beyond Good and Evil demo does not end with like, and that makes the game better. It's more right. Like, that tech's cool. And maybe it'll work itself out.
I would love for it.
But like, the Cyberpunk demo was an exercise and like, we built this tech to do this.
To make you feel.
To communicate a feeling. Yes. To communicate a place. Yeah. To communicate a structure.
To and communicate, it like
works
a,
exactly the yeah. way I think they wanted it to.
Totally. And then we get to speak to, again, one of the designers, someone who was on the development team, mm-hmm. about, I forget what role he had, and it's late.
He's a designer.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things, so today Polygon ran a story about The Division 2,
oh,
in which there's this amazing exchange where Charlie Hall is speaking mm-hmm. to a dev on or comms mm-hmm. person on Division 2. I don't know what the role was. And is like, so this game takes place in Washington, D.C. Like, is there something political you're trying to say here? And they're like, no, this is apolitical. And like, okay, but like, there's American flags, there's like, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're charging into Washington, D.C. to kill a corrupt, tyrannical like leader, like, what are you saying here? And it's like, oh no, we just want to explore Washington, D.C. It's like, oh, fuck, okay. Like, you really can't say shit about anything. We spent 20 minutes talking to this dude, and like, he was like, well, yeah, in the 80s, Reagan and Thatcher were, you know, a big cause of what Cyberpunk turns out to be. It is a genre. Obviously, not everyone who works at CD Projekt Red has the same political perspective, so I can't speak for everybody, and a lot of people working in this game have differences of opinion about a lot of things, but yes, there is a perspective in this game. This is a game about oppression. This is a game about class. This is a game about kind of economic instability and about the ways in which people are oppressed. There are little people and there are big people, and this game is about how big people hurt little people.
And I liked the line that he used, mm-hmm. like, we're not going to tell you what the message is,
right?
But we're not going to pretend there's not a message. We've thought about this game. Right. We've thought about what this game is communicating. We're not here to tell you, like, this is what your takeaways from Cyberpunk 2077 should be. But of course there's something there. And I was like, that's all anyone wants to hear. That's all any of us have
ever wanted to fucking hear is like, hey.
Just, you guys are thoughtful, smart people that don't build this shit for nothing.
For nothing. Yeah. So it was a very, I walked away, you know, I'm not a person who's like, I'm blown away. But like, I cannot imagine having a more, and again, I walked into it knowing that it was not just a genre I liked, not just a developer I liked, mm-hmm. a franchise I liked, but an entire ethos that I liked, an entire way of game making. We talked about Beyond Good and Evil being so frustrating because Ubisoft is a very wealthy company that could, if they believed in a project, put resources on it to make sure that they could create the assets they need. If they really thought that was a project to pursue, they have the ability to do that. That might mean making a hard choice and deciding another project can't happen, or meaning that this one can't happen right now. That is part of what having resources is. Unfortunately, we do not live in a post-scarcity society. CD Projekt Red has the opposite position, which is they kept saying, we can't make a bad game. Partially out of like pressure of the notion of like, we made The Witcher 3. We were doing a follow-up to that fucking thing that so many people loved. But partially because it felt almost like we don't take many chances. We give ourselves a long amount of time, which means we're not at the plate swinging over and over again and hoping for a home run. We have to hit the ball. We have to make progress on this thing. And so it felt like the opposite, which is like, if you are one of these big companies, do the fucking thing. To do it, you do it. And like, they spent the money to do this. They put the resources in place to do this. They brought in the talent to do this. I hope that they stick the landing because the demonstration was so beautiful. You know, the exhibition of talent, the exhibition of what could be done here is so thrilling. And I hope that they manage to stick the landing on it. Not because I am afraid of eating crow or something, like, but because as excited as I am about this is how disappointed I would be if they don't stick the landing.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a demo like this. It was wild. And then I got to completely fanboy out because Mike Pondsmith, which is in the other room, Mike Pondsmith, who wrote the original Cyberpunk 2020, or before 2020, he wrote Cyberpunk the RPG, and then 2020, and then version 3. And I finally got to go up and be like, I like your work a lot, Mr. Pondsmith. Hi, my name's Austin.
I walked, like, we were both sitting there, and I was like, I'm going to go. I was like, I'm going to walk away and I'm going to watch this happen. And it was
I walked over
cute.
And I mean, Cyberpunk 3.0 version 3 has some such cool shit in it. It's a game that I don't think is particularly super good. It has some really neat ideas about moving away from the like leather and chrome and mirror shade stuff of 2020 and the 80s version of Cyberpunk, and looking at kind of like bio and it, way more transhumanist, way more like blending, you know, human bodies with animal bodies and non you know earthly bodies altogether. And it has this really great idea of a thing called the data crash, which is like written in 2006-2007 about the idea that like, oh, all the data in the world is corrupted by this virus. There is a paper virus that destroys all written records, or many written records. Written records are exceedingly rare. And so suddenly, everything has a veracity index. Everything's on Verit. Everything is like, you can't trust anything. 100%. Like, there's 30 versions or 300 versions of video of Richard Nixon resigning that the virus has created. Which one do you trust? Like, okay, well, I guess the one that we all collectively agree upon. And it's like very much was a decade ago making me think about the inevitability of the eradication of kind of truth in media, right? Mm. Way before the words fake news were ever uttered, Mike Pondsmith was dreaming about when we wouldn't be able to trust videotape. And it's so cool to see him get this. Like, for me, so much of this is like, yo, you scribbled down this idea for like rock and roll cyberpunks in the 1980s. And also, like, Mike Pondsmith is like a 50 something year old black dude who like embodies everything that I could hope to be as a creator in terms of understanding the medium and understanding the genre. And so it was so nice to actually meet that dude and say, yo, you figured this shit out. Nice work and congrats. Like, this is a dream. Like, you don't have to dream no more. You got real shit. That was very nice. I'm glad I got to have the very rare fanboy moment for me. So that was our Cyberpunk experience. Oh, sorry beautiful. For just going a mile a minute. I could talk about this for another 3 hours. I really could. I wish that demo was out there because...
It will be.
And you'll see. It's the only time I ever wanted to, like... slow like walk through frame
like
by frame
director's commentary 100%. And like didn't get a chance to like look at all the fake fucking you know
brands and like
which I'm sure are all extremely so
that'll come.
It will.
Don't mean to be a hype man, but I don't know if I couldn't have been.
The reason I'm not a hype man most of the time is because like when I want to double down and be like, yo, they showed some shit, I want it to count, and like it seemed to count. I think there's stuff here that will be abrasive. I think the main character is really harsh, is like even like the dude who they showed narrating the trailer that was at the Microsoft show was like a little too like edgelordy, and she's a little edgelordy too, but there are these moments where you can feel it's a posture and that's cool, where you can feel that it's like, oh, she's trying to be hard, because if she isn't, she'll get fucking eaten up out here,
right?
Nice.
And I think there's probably some language stuff here, right? There's lots of like dudes calling you a pussy, right? There's lots of like tons of like, I'm dropping fuck way more often than I normally do because I'm just like in that cyberpunk mode, but it is like willing to be super grimy.
Even she is using language
100%
all over the place because maybe situational.
Words I wouldn't say. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it didn't bug me that much because
it felt within the aesthetic.
Yeah. It felt like it was within the unity of effect there. It didn't feel cheap. Which I think is...
The voice acting is very good. The writing is very good.
Yeah. But I'm saying there are things that I think could make this something that could be too harsh for somebody.
Right.
There is a world in which, just like The Witcher 3 has some shit that I think puts people off for fair reason. I don't think this is like the game for everybody in that way. But it is like the cyberpunk game.
It's the game for everybody.
Right. Ubisoft does, right? And like... That's not a shot
Tom
at Ubisoft.
Tom Clancy's Game for Everybody.
Right. Game for people who like think that you can march on Washington, D.C. without it meaning anything, right? So I get the desire to have that. I would rather them take the chance here and try to make something very voicey and very unique. All right. I think I've got it out of my system. I've sweated it all out. I'm going to drink this beer, and then we can all go to bed.
Beer and
Cyberpunk
bed.
2077. Rob, you're gonna see that tomorrow. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, dude, now I'm like,
I just
want to
sneak in with you. What time?
Yeah, maybe
you two should both go.
Yeah,
you should try to please.
What
if
time,
it schedules
what time
out?
Are you going?
12:00.
Oh, I think I have an appointment.
Try to figure it out.
Try and see.
You want to see it Thursday? I know you don't. I think your Thursday is pretty light. If you can get in touch with them,
I might be able to.
It's
you can even just go with Rob. Ask them.
Like, I hadn't even thought about it as an immersive sim. I hadn't even thought about it as an immersive sim.
Because the things you were talking about with that, I was like, oh.
But also, like, not to keep going down this road, but, like, it doesn't feel... So when we talked about the death of the immersive sim...
Yeah.
Right. There's an archetype. There's a template. This game, when you look at it, if you love immersive sims, you look at it and it's like, oh, I see it here. But it doesn't feel like one of those games.
Okay.
Like, when we played it, I wept for the Deus Ex team because this feels like... I liked those two Deus Ex games, right? But they feel like very much like just evolutions, like modernizations of a thing that already existed.
Yeah.
This feels like, and again, you know, caveat of how they'll, you know, execute out in the end, feels like what would you actually as a dream want a Deus Ex to be as a sequel?
Right.
Not just that game with better graphics and a new story, but like, what would you want Deus Ex to be in 2018? Right. And this game felt like that without feeling like that.
This is going to be a situation.
Being its own thing. Yes. Having its own voice.
Right.
Yeah.
But you see it. Like, if you like... Yeah. And this, like, when we were talking about, like, where would Arkane go after this, like, it's a different context. It's like, it's taking that DNA and doing something different with it, and this game feels just like that. I was actually frustrated as they were going from room to room, and I was like, yo, I know, like, the story's supposed to keep going, but, like, there's, like, fucking boxes you gotta look through. And I'm sure you're gonna be able to do that in this game. And I was like itching when like
scan stuff
I thought
so
I was
bad.
Like I thought I saw something flashing in the corner and like that probably means there's like some ammo or some junk you could collect. So like
some
I
emails
know that
lady to read.
Is dying in the tub, but like there's probably at least like six things you could pick up.
I'm just trying to pump the brakes on the fear of hyperbolics a little bit here, which is I suspect people will see this demo in 2 months or a month or a week. Who knows? Whenever they make a version of this demo that they're happy to just like release as a video, they'll release it. And I think maybe after hearing us, you'll be like, oh yeah, that was cool.
Right.
Just like, please imagine that what we thought we were going to get was Deus Ex, Mankind Divided 2, right? Which is a neat game, but like is sparse, is gray. Is not apolitical, but in fact puts you in certain positions, but plays with politics without ever actually necessarily treating some of the language that it is co-opting with the... that's unfair. I think the actual game did better than
the marketing did.
The marketing was way worse than that game.
Yeah.
But like it's just the thing we'd seen before. I thought we were going to see one of those, and we saw a different thing. And
it goes steps further than I was expecting in a way that I was like, it makes you very excited about the potential of where it could go.
Yeah. So I'm excited. We'll see how that goes. That is going to do it for us tonight, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. As always, you can follow
us. There's other things we can talk about, but we're just not going to do it tonight.
Yeah, not tonight. Twitter.com/waypoint for us. Also, underscore Walker here. Danielle, what about you?
At Danielle or I.
Rob. LA Rob.
At Rob Zachney.
There you go. Patrick Klepek.
At Patrick Klepek. What are people seeing tomorrow?
Teasers. Yep.
Last of Us 2, I'm doing an interview. Which is good. Tomb Raider.
Right.
And there's a third one.
It's a Don't Nod thing. My guess is probably going to see a little bit more of that. Captain
Underpants.
Sure.
Is that
game.
That game.
The game that comes out. I'm going to see... we're going to see Dying Light 2.
Yep. Psyched for that.
I'm going to go see Resident Evil 2.
Nice.
And then I'm going to go play Rage 2. It's a day of twos.
All the twos.
Two twos.
I have a Konami unannounced thing tomorrow. Is that... I heard that might be a mobile track and field game.
Oh, I saw something about that.
Something.
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
I'm actually a little curious. Not going to lie.
Daniel, you're curious about that mobile track and field game? Go check that out, Danielle.
I used to be like the Majesco. Remember there was like a Majesco booth?
Majesco.
No, I'm not saying they didn't, but Babysitting Mama was not maybe one of their best.
Yeah, fair.
And I used to have to like do a write up of each and every game at like the 505 booth, the Majesco booth.
Oh man, I've been there.
Michael Phelps swimming simulator on Kinect.
It was a game.
Oh boy.
Now we just do this, and then you're done.
I'm not done. I got to
edit. No, but you edit it. But
I'm going to be in my underwear in bed editing this.
There you go.
And you know, that's the vision you should all take. Cyberpunk 2077, edit podcasts in bed.
What are you doing tomorrow, Rob?
Metro Exodus.
Hell yeah. I'm so excited to talk to you about that. Oh, are you? You've seen Total War? Awesome. Yeah. That's also I'll talk to you about both of those tomorrow. That's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I also have Untitled Publisher, which is the
Crystal Wire stuff.
There's going to be three things there that I'm excited to see. And Zone of the Enders on PC, which is like another one. You're the mech. Two, it's a remake of a game. It's Zone of the Enders 2, which is a really great game. And then it's just on PC, so it's like I want to see it look good. I'm not doing the VR one, but just the
4K Zone of the Enders probably looks
all right. We already talked about Natalie and Danica are going to see tomorrow? Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's going to do it for us today. God, in this terrible cyberpunk dystopia of ours, what do we tell them?
Be good and be good at it.
We Gucci.
Natalie's dead.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.